So what's up? What's up, everybody? What's up, Warren? Welcome to today's show. I don't know. What do we have to talk about?
Oh, I got all kinds of stuff.
Oh, good. Because I'm totally bereft. After doing a show every day, I'm like, I don't know what to talk about.
Well, yeah, so that we can talk, I can speak intelligently with you on Thursday. I've been trying to just listen to all the stuff that you do, and I can't even, like, listen to, like, I don't even have time to, like, while I'm doing other stuff.
Yeah, I know.
All your stuff. Like, I got most of the TDSs this week, Strike and Mike, I only caught the beginning of.
Yeah, but I think that the stuff that we've been focusing on this week is how, well, what's interesting to me is how this outbreak of violence, it's not really an outbreak, it's just there's been a couple spectacular violent events in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I think we need to even start to, like in America, somebody said something to me today, which made me really kind of think, which was people were talking about the Ukraine war. And they were like, what are people going to do or think when it turns out that everything they heard about it was bullshit and the Russians just win? The Ukrainian plucky resistance wasn't so plucky. They weren't just like, Ukrainian soldiers weren't just like taking out mass numbers of Russian troops who were having explosive diarrhea and like shitting themselves at the thought of fighting and revolting against Putin and refusing to fight, and Putin doesn't really have, like, blood cancer, isn't all these things, just all these narratives just constantly repeated. You can still see them repeated if you go to Yahoo News. And he was saying, a friend of his was talking about his wife was talking at work with, like, normie women who were just, like, sort of arrogantly repeating all this stuff about Russia and Ukraine and, like, these brave Ukrainians, like, beating Russia and stuff. But it wasn't like a big deal, but they were just kind of arrogantly reciting the MSM back to each other. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, what are they going to think when this is all bullshit? That's what everybody was talking about. And then somebody said something very interesting. They said, well, if you live in America, every single thing you're told to believe is bullshit. So Americans have this like scar tissue over that part of their brain, like the cognitive dissonance part of the brain. Like, mm-hmm. I think Americans just have, like, scar tissue there. Like, it's just, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just, you can just, like, nothing gets through. Like, it's like, okay, that was false. All right, well, everything's false. So what does it matter? That's just one more thing. And the Ukraine thing is, like, really, really unimportant relative to other kinds of narratives that, I mean, to Americans. It's not unimportant globally. It's unimportant to the average American. They don't really care about it. So they're just reciting it to themselves. Like, oh, it's kind of funny. Russia's getting their ass kicked. Oh, isn't that interesting? They don't really give a shit. Like, nobody really cares, right?
Yeah.
So, which is rational. It's, like, a total rational not caring about it. But it's, like, if you think that they're going to have a problem processing that cognitive, this, no one's gonna have a problem with it. They're just gonna not think about it, move on. And the media will probably give some stupid cope, but it won't matter.
Yeah.
But like every other thing you're told, like racial stuff, like you're told every day that whites and blacks are equal or you know, but not really, but actually black people are just better. You're told every day that white supremacist violence is the worst thing. You're told every day that school, this point he made was like school segregation. He's like, people that can still tell themselves that school desegregation was a success and be in favor of it, be like vehemently against the idea of resegregating schools, despite the fact that schools are basically unusable for normal people at this point. They can still sit there and say that, like, they just have scar tissue over your cognitive dissonance part of your brain. You're just so used to every single thing, every single political narrative you're told in this country is bullshit. Like, your eyes and ears tell you different constantly, all the time, from every single thing that the political and media class in this country tell you. So I think that people just are, I don't even know, everyone's walking around just like, I guess a lot of people also just check out of media. They just don't even bother, except maybe entertainment media, which also has the same bullshit embedded in it, but it's easier to ignore, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it has to do with so much the fact that people there's just bullshit narratives and people tune it out so much as just the kind of people that hop on the latest bandwagon of the month. You talk to them a month later, I mean, I'll just give you the example. How many, the one that's in my mind, how many Americans were convinced and were telling everyone that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and that we desperately needed to go into Iraq? And
I don't think any, really.
There were a lot of Republicans.
But they knew it was bullshit, though. They knew that was maybe a lie.
They just wanted to go in.
I never believed a single person that told me they actually believed that Saddam, or that him having weapons of mass destruction was an actual, like, the problem was that narrative was set up and liberals didn't do anything to attack. This is how liberals contributed to the war effort. They didn't attack the entire premise that if he does have a canister of sarin gas someplace in the country, that means we get to invade the country. Like, that was never challenged. It was simply saying, like, he doesn't have them, and they could always have possibly produced, like, something. And it basically became a game of gotcha. Like, will weapons inspectors find, like, one, like, shell with something bad in it, or they could easily plant it? You know, they never did, which I thought they were going. I just assumed they would plant it. They never did. But it was still, like, everybody – it was just that the people that pretended to believe it just, like, wanted to go kick ass. I mean, Jesse, as a former Republican, told me this was his feeling. He's like, I knew that it was total bullshit, but I just wanted to go kick some Arab's ass because of 9/11. When he was like a Limbaugh tier conservative. I mean, I think
that the mass psychology, mass hysteria is a better word for it. When there's a sort of mass hysteria, and right now it's not the whole country, you know, I mean, back then.
Well, they can't generate mass hysteria anymore.
Yeah, the media was a lot. Well, they can in certain quarters, but it's very, targeted and it's very shallow. It's a kind of shallow hysteria, but the kind of shitlib Ukraine hysteria that they successfully had, there was a lot of it there right at the start, and then it was just sort of died.
Now.
Yeah, but the people are still parroting this stuff. My point is that if tomorrow it came out that that Ukraine lost completely and Putin's not dying and he took over Ukraine, these people, I don't think any of them would be like, well, the media lied to me. I thought Putin's, they're just going to be like, well, Putin was going to win. You know, he's a vicious dictator. Hitler talks about this in Mein Kampf, the way that people can just, the masses can just switch their mind, switch their opinion and go along with the bandwagon. I mean, it's a universal phenomenon of crowds. It's an old crowds. It's a Liban observation about crowds. I think that there's an element to what you're saying as far as that they just don't believe because it's all bullshit from the system.
Well, it's not so much that they don't believe it. It's just that, like, people, I think the question of believing it or not believing it isn't what's there. I think the main thing I thought was interesting was that the point he's making was they'll move on from this bullshit because people are so used to rationalizing things. Like, everything, every narrative you're given in America is false. Every single one.
Right.
So, and this one isn't even a very important one. So yeah. It won't be a big deal at all for them to move on from it, right? They'll just step over.
Whatever. Yeah.
And the reason, absolutely, it's sort of like if people can step over things like school segregation, if people can step over things like black crime in America, which are far bigger deals and far more impactful. Like, if you can step over the fact that you're in your life, everything you get on TV and in movies and in the news media tells you black people are like the most noble, long-suffering people that are unjustly oppressed by all this, by you and everything. Yet at the same time, you just actively avoid black parts of cities. You're uncomfortable when large numbers of black people are around, and you purposefully leave when that starts happening. And yet in your mind, and then you'll go home to like a neighborhood, you know, as far away from black people as you can afford to live, and you'll watch TV and movies all about how great black people are. Like,
Yeah. So step by step over, you're saying like people can just hold the 1984
Yeah, they're just holding
thing.
Contradictory
they can hold two contradictory
concept,
viewpoints
right.
in their head, doublethink.
Yeah, so it's not even really it doesn't even really become about Russia and Ukraine. It's like that that was something because I was because you know how the coverage of that and how everything is just obviously bullshit and they're it's just so clearly not true and it's just it's like laughable and it makes you wonder like why are they even bothering to do it? Like who are they trying to fool? I think they're trying to fool themselves more than almost anybody at this point. But I don't know what the political angle is of continuing to just lie about that, particularly when we're probably like days, weeks, if not days away from a Russian victory. But yeah, it's like that wasn't even really the point. It's just sort of like America is just a, it's a land. I think did Putin say was he the one that said it was an empire of lies? Who said that? Somebody said that recently. I think it was it Lavrov? I think maybe it was Lavrov that said that.
I'm not sure.
It's not wrong. I mean, it really is. Sure. Like, everything in this country is bullshit. Every single thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
And it's like there's nothing. And it's thing, I think, like, increasingly people, like, there's a, this is another reason why you get so much irony and sarcasm from, like, you know, Xers and Zoomers and such. It's just like, whatever, dude. Like, I mean, and this, and it's also why increasingly there's another fad that happens in America, the sort of a last wall of defense the Jews put up, which is the idea of anybody trying to get you to believe anything is scamming you. And you should just, like, yeah, like, whatever, roll your eyes, like Big Lebowski style, like nihilism, right? Like, that's the funny thing about the Big Lebowski is that. The bad guys in the movie are supposedly nihilists, but Lebowski is like also a nihilist, right? Like the hero is also a nihilist.
Yeah, yeah.
I
never liked that movie.
it's got funny stuff in it. Don't get me wrong, but it's not like it's not like a life changing, like you know, movie. I mean, there's funny bits in it, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's just funny like little owns of like stupid libtarded type people and things like that. But like, it's not like a profound movie in any way. It's sort of funny. It's just, I mean, I don't know if it's on purpose, that if that irony is built in on purpose, that, like, the bad guys are nihilists, but then Lebowski's also just, like, a nihilist. Like, that's I'm sure others have made that observation, too. Or maybe not, I don't know.
Well, you know, we could talk a little bit about, yeah, there's a whole bunch of things I want to talk about. Actually, some announcements, first of all, right at the top. Greg Conte just put out, these are our fellow NGP council members. Greg just put out a new podcast.
Okay.
That he's calling Prussian. What is it? He's naming it after Spengler's actually, thing. Okay. Prussianism and socialism. I think he's calling it. It's on. I shared it on my Telegram, and he's basically Prussian socialism, and he says we'll cover the great men and ideas of European history and culture from a national socialist perspective. And I recorded a sort of a one of several like pilot type episodes with him a few weeks ago when he visited me. So that should be good. That's out on Telegram, and it's also on Odyssey. And my dad actually was on the Nordic Resistance Movement's podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this past week, and
that's good.
It was a really good show. So those are two announcements. Emily and I have a new Modern Politics out. We did a super big long thing about the just the way the FBI tries to create terrorism and the Great Replacement and the whole thing. The other bit of news that I just saw, actually, right as we started recording, is Ray Liotta has passed.
Yes, I saw that this afternoon. Yeah.
That sucks.
I guess.
I mean, like that guy. Yeah, he was 67 years old. Yeah, yeah, it was pretty young. Pretty young. He looked a lot like somebody that I knew who also passed away recently. Yeah. I saw
that. He was also in you ever see that movie Copland?
No, I don't think I've ever seen Ray Liotta in anything other than Goodfellas, but I love him in Goodfellas.
He's been in a bunch of things, but I can't remember what they were. It's been a while, but he was good in Goodfellas. Goodfellas is good. Copland, I think Copland might have also been Scorsese. I'm not sure. Copland was basically about this town in New Jersey right across from New York City where all the cops live. Because it's basically like they created a little community for cops because the cops didn't want to live in New York City. So they created this nice little suburb for New York City cops. And Sylvester Stallone is like the cop for that town. Like that town also had its own cops, even though it was all cops that lived there. And like the cops were doing corruption. Yeah. And Stallone was like trying to do something about it, and none of the cops would like break the blue wall of silence, except Ray Liotta had been like bounced out of the police force for some something, some alcohol or drug abuse problem that he had, but he was like had a heart of gold and like helped Stallone like take down whatever this corruption was. Anyway, it's a pretty good movie. It's a pretty fun movie.
Yeah. Yeah,
no, it's pretty basic. I mean, there might be some like really awful stuff in there that I don't remember. If someone's like that has seen it recently, like, that's a really anti-white movie. It's like in the comments, but I just I don't remember. It was who knows? It was just it's just a movie I remember liking when I was younger.
Yeah, Goodfellas is it's you know what's interesting about it? It's like. It's very, I don't know, it's just like a very white man movie without really intending to be, you know? I don't know, it's something just very enjoyable about it, about these characters and their world that they inhabit.
It's a fun movie to watch. Like, movies are not enjoyable to watch anymore, frankly.
Yeah, I was watching it one time and I thought about it, I realized that, like, this is... for and I know there's a thing with Jews and glamorizing gangsters in movies, and that's a whole thing. But Goodfellas, it's interesting because the old Anglo-Saxon ruling.
Are you just real quick? Are you like? Is there some setting on your? Are your gain high or something? Because I'm trying to mess with you, but you're real chunky. Like you're coming through like real, like you're distorting at the up at the far end of your, I don't know, maybe you're up high on the mic or you got gain turned up or something. Sorry. No, it's not terrible, but it's definitely distorted. Like as you get louder,
let me turn my gain down a little bit.
Yeah, do that.
Just the setting.
Yeah, that's, oh yeah. Wait, speak.
Okay. How about now? Is that a little better?
That seems to be better. Yeah. Still, you were really like crunch, like it was like getting all crunchy at the end. Like, yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure what the hell that was. I know I had my fan on earlier, and I could see a little.
You sound way better now.
Okay.
Whatever. Right. Oh, did you turn the fan off? Now you're just be sweltering?
Yeah, well, no, I turned it off earlier because I could see on Audacity there was – I turned it on just to see if it was picking up any background noise.
Well, if you just get a little background hum, that's not a big deal. Like that's not going to bother anybody.
But the super blowing out the speakers, we don't have that.
But anyway. Yeah, you were like blowing up the – you sound much better now, so yeah.
Good. But yeah, Goodfellas, I was thinking about it one time, just that a lot of the white people that came into the country that were blue collar that came in during the 20th century that ended up getting involved in like, you know, organized crime.
I wonder how much of a phenomenon that really was, like how many people really actually did that.
I don't know. I mean, I know it was a thing. It was a real thing. And maybe Hollywood overplays it up, but the old Anglo-Saxon elite that was still running the country during much of the period that Goodfellas portrays, if you wanted to get ahead fast, the way forward was kind of blocked to you if you were someone who was from a real blue collar inner city, you know, like basically a ghetto, and crime would be one way that you could get rich really quick, you know. And what I liked about Goodfellas as a film, and we don't have to do a big movie thing here, but I just wanted to comment on it since Ray Liotta just died. I like how it explores the mafia as a little underground economy. You know, as opposed to something like The Godfather, where it's all like dynastic, it's making it into some sort of grand thing. Like we're watching, the royal dynasty, you know, the succession of some sort of noble thing. Goodfellas into just sort of funny characters. Lorraine Bracco character calls them just blue collar guys, and this is how they're getting ahead, by cutting corners. But it's funny because Emily jokes about, like the wedding scene, how there's like parallels to our community as far as you start. After a certain point, it's like everyone you know is somebody in the thing with you, and you all like exist in this world, you know?
Right. No, that's – yeah. No, I mean I've even called the thing that we have. I've even called it our thing, you know? Our thing, right? And that's that's what they would call it in The Godfather, etc. You know, what that's what the whole thing is, our thing. But you don't have to say what it is. Everybody knows it's the thing, right? The thing. Yeah, is he in the thing? And if someone new comes in, goes, is that guy in the thing? Yeah, he's in the thing. He's scary. Maybe he's getting involved in the thing. I don't know. But yeah. But it's the thing, right? And it's not a criminal. It's just a political. It's just like a political. It's just like a decision to exist together in a certain way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not even all political either. It's partly political. That's a driving force of it. But it's a bunch of people that have decided to live their lives together as a community in a certain way. And that's what we've decided to do.
And the other aspect of it, I think, that's familiar to people is that there's a slight element of risk, you know, to it. It's not.
Oh, yeah. That's what kind of makes it fun.
Yeah, exactly. There's a forbidden quality to it. There's a risk factor, and there's a real community there. And I think that's maybe another reason why people enjoy a film like Goodfellas is, even though, you know, at the end of the day, they're it's all about money, and these guys all stab each other in the back. So it, in that way,
that never happened to white nationalists.
Right, exactly. Well, there's just no money with white nationalists.
The difference is there's no money, right?
But that aspect of it, the sort of community aspect of it, that's probably another reason why people enjoy watching it, because they don't have that anymore in their daily lives. You know, we could talk.
Oh yeah, if you watch the scenes when he's a kid and like the neighborhood and stuff, nobody has that anymore. Nobody has that. I mean, we've talked about that a lot.
Yeah,
but
Mike, I think you were saying on TDS about alienation and nihilism and this shooter. You know, because this thing happened in Texas. First of all, I posted on my Telegram. There were a couple of beautiful little white girls that were killed by this psycho.
Yes, there were two white young little white girls that were killed. Yeah,
it wasn't just all, you know, Mexican on Mexican.
And I wonder what their lives were like in that town before. Like, what was it like being the 10%? That town is 10% white.
I thought about that too. I was just
what
wondering.
Was that like for them? And they had probably been there a long time. I mean, they looked like they were kind of like rednecky peep type, you know. The girl's dad was like a big like Bubba type dude with a cowboy hat and sunglasses. You know, like, I'm just wondering, like, what was that town like in the 80s?
Yeah,
probably all people like that, right?
It's a good question. Well, you made a great point when you said that the government. What did you say? That the government, it's like. We can't even trust them to keep guns out of the hands of crazy people.
Well, no, that was like a point that I'm really gonna drive home. It's like if you can't manage the task, because it's the reason that people are so entrenched on the gun rights thing is because they know that the government doesn't really care about the government's just trying to disarm innocent people.
Yes.
Because it's afraid of them and hates them. They're not, yes. They don't, this, and all this bloodshed is an excuse for that. And it all gets directed into that. And it's like, why is it? Why is it that you cannot handle it? You can't walk and chew gum. You can't stop lunatics from shooting up public places while also allowing law abiding citizens to exercise their rights. If that's the case, if you're telling us, and they're telling us every day, they can't possibly handle that challenge, well, then step down.
Yeah.
Get out of the way. You don't deserve to be in the position you're in. If you can't protect people's rights while also stopping people from slaughtering them in public en masse, then you're just not the right people for the job.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I put out a statement on Telegram about it where I basically was saying that the thing is, I mean, anybody with a kid, anybody period feels, you know, fears a mass shooting incident, and anyone with a kid, I mean, that's the ultimate nightmare is that sort of scenario, exactly like this. But the crazy thing is, the reason why, I mean, I was thinking about it, and I thought the reason why Americans, why Republicans particularly, and conservatives and white people on the right will not budge on guns, it's not because they're not afraid of mass shooters or they're not afraid of a mass shooter shooting up their kids at school. Mm-hmm. It's that they are more afraid of blacks and they are more afraid of the government
mm-hmm.
than they are a mass shooter. And here's why. Because the odds of losing your child to a mass shooter are very low. I mean, infinitesimal. You know, it's tiny, tiny, tiny. It's like getting struck by lightning. But the odds,
I think it's increasingly less low. But yeah, I don't think that's a calculation that people make. But yeah.
But I mean, on an instinctive level, on an instinctive level, the odds of becoming a victim to black crime are much higher. And as we know, blacks are going to use guns whether they're outlawed or not. But then this is the big thing. The big thing is that because of the government, because of the government's behavior, especially over the last 2 years in the Justice Department, because of the fact that the whole January 6th thing was to criminalize essentially anyone with a right-wing viewpoint, Americans essentially have no doubt yeah. that if they surrender their guns, they're surrendering all their other rights too.
Or even if they give this thing like, okay, we'll give you the right to have like a way to flag somebody as a nut, and then they can't have a gun.
Right.
Right now, that's actually not – now people are going to get like – remove yourself from America for a second. Because in it's the context totally of America, reasonable. It's an unacceptable –
In a normal world, that's totally reasonable.
Yeah, right. And in America, yes. it's completely unacceptable. But in a yes. normal world, it shouldn't be.
Yes.
It should actually be, okay, this dude has serious mental health problems. Okay, we're going to put him on a list. Or we're going to just make sure that he can't – whatever we do, he can't get a gun, right?
Yes.
If he's showing signs of violent mental illness or needs to be committed. The other thing is why we don't commit people to mental asylums anymore, of course. Now, the other thing is, but a lot of these people are like 18 years old. And yeah. then they're just because of the – I mean, so the question is like what's going on in these schools? And we've talked about this for a long time. Like – I hated school when I was a kid. I don't know anybody that likes it. I don't think that people always hated school, though.
You're right.
I think people might have thought school was, like, tough, but I don't think I always hated it. But what is it? What kind of dynamics are going on where you get these – the fact that the schools are fairly regularly churning out these people who are completely nihilistic and detached. And not just the school either. The school is just one part of it. It's the entire society. And possibly even things in their family as well, and possibly the fact that they're nutcases or as well or whatever, or you know who knows. But all these combinations of factors, it's sort of like, why suddenly in you know Bill Maher made this point. And I know Bill Maher is like half Jewish and he sucks and all this stuff, but he's the one that kind of like tries to put the libtards back on track to keep them from going too far.
Yeah, put
to, like,
the brakes on it. He's their right. e-brake, I heard you guys say.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly right.
So he's like the emergency brake. So, right. So, like, he's the parking brake for, like, the system, right? So he says, like, if trans kids are a natural phenomena, why are they regional? Why do we have a ton of them in California and none in Ohio?
Mm.
He's like, why are there like no trans kids? Why are there no kids becoming trans in Ohio and a lot becoming trans in California? And then now their answer would be, well, because in Ohio there's like this repressive social atmosphere where people fear becoming trans. And it's obviously,
oh my God.
I would say the exact opposite is true in California.
It's the oppressive social atmosphere yeah, where people, you're encouraged to become.
Where people are like told to make their kids, and it's a much sicker place, right? It's a much sicker, more awful place in terms of the social environment, right? So so there's that. So it's like, what is it? So if all of a sudden they can, through these pressures and stuff, create people that are saying that they're trans, can they set up an incentive for kids to raise their hand and say, oh, I'm trans, because it's like the good thing to be? If they can set up the incentive for parents to say, oh, yes, my kid is trans, isn't it wonderful? Let's go out, like, let's put this little boy in a dress and put like gaudy female makeup on him when he's like six and take him out to the pride parades and pretend like we're like the best people on earth for doing this and get all kinds of accolades. Well, you know, if they can do that with social manipulation, you know, you can also make people better. With the same kind of inputs, the same kind of tactics, you know, the same kind of ways of shaping people. And so if you can do that, you're shaping people into being these crazy freaks. And then you're getting more and more of these crazy freaks doing these outbursts where they're just like killing a bunch of people.
It's not just that somebody snaps. I mean, this guy went and purchased these guns and was planning this.
Oh, no, there's no snapping. The snapping thing is.
That's what's even more like disturbing about it. I mean, I have to say, Mike, I am deeply disturbed, deeply disturbed by these mass shootings.
I mean, it's just, you think about it, it's like,
it is so sick. And just, and it, you know, because it's not just like that it's cruel or that it's evil. because a lot of things are cruel and evil, you know. Cluster
if it only ever happened one time, it would be like, all right, I guess that was a really nutcase and what a tragedy, but it's like a one-off. But this is happening. And the thing is, it's like the only response they can think of. I mean, it's like, why is it that taking the... Because people used to have guns. Like, Americans have always had guns.
My dad always talks about that. When he grew up, he's like, you could get a 1911 45 automatic. Dude, you could order it through the Sears Roebuck catalog.
If you literally lived in New York City, you could go to you could open up the Sears catalog and place a mail order for a rifle.
Yeah.
To come, and it would come delivered to your door.
Yeah.
In the middle of New York City, the mail would just drop it off. Here's your product, sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
No problems. You could go buy a gun. There used to be gun stores in New York City. Well, yeah. What
gets me about it is just the fact that, like, you can understand if not approve of or think it's right, but you can understand how someone could be so depressed and just disillusioned and maybe like clinically messed up that they take a gun and they, you know, blow their head off and just they put an end to it. And you can understand also someone who, you know, a domestic dispute or a workplace violence where someone hates their boss and their life is, you know, their ex-wife divorces them, takes everything, and they just snap and they go off and they shoot the person and shoot themselves. And that happens all the time. But this phenomenon of going to a place where there's just completely random innocent people, and then in this case, children, and shooting as many of them as possible, I don't understand it. Like the guy, the one in Las Vegas, really freaked me out because the guy is like the classic. When you read about his life story, he's just the classic. It's like boomer nihilism at its absolute worst. Boomer self-centered nihilism. I mean, the guy just lived for money, had tons of money, was a compulsive gambler, marries like a gook wife. So the kind of classic.
Didn't he have like a couple of them?
I think so. It's like, you know, the rich boomer sex tourist, like with Asians. And then what does he do on his way out? Guns down dozens of like young white people at a concert, you know, at a country western concert, I think it was. I mean, these are people like, they're, you know, we already have few enough. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just like this is blasé.
And when they went and talked to his brother, his brother just bragged about how rich they were.
Yeah.
Which is weird, right? He's like, we used to go to all those hotels, get comped. And like, that was the whole comp thing came out. People like, yo, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? I mean,
you hear about war atrocities, Mike, and you hear about stuff in Vietnam and you know, even like the Ardennes offensive, you know, they're supposedly the Nazis, you know, there was a thing where there was a bunch of guys, American prisoners of war shot, and certainly countless German prisoners of war were shot. I mean, in wartime, guys under stress after years of combat, you can understand it. You can kind of like, okay, that's horrible. It's an atrocity, but I could see how that could happen. I feel like this phenomenon, there's something so American about it. I mean, like
well, it only happens here. Like, the, yeah, it's and there have been a few we have begun. Other places that, and of course, the countries most adjacent to America are the other places that happen. Like, Britain has had a couple, Australia's had a couple, but they literally took away guns when that happened.
Right.
Like, Australia took away guns, Britain took away handguns, and I think that they have taken away semi-automatic. I don't think you can have any, even rifles you can have, they can't be semi-auto, so you have to have just like bolt action or something. I don't know, or maybe there's a certain type of hunting only type rifle that you can get, but it's very difficult. Like, it's as difficult to get a hunting rifle as it is to get a handgun in New York City or something like that. And again, that would work. Well, the problem is when they passed the law in 1996 banning handguns in Great Britain after a mass shooting, after a school shooting, actually, where it was even before Columbine and like 17 kids were shot. And they passed this law and they went and they collected 160,000 handguns from all of Great Britain. That's as many as there were that were turned in, legally owned.
Yeah.
And so now you're getting like, people are like praising that, but this kid didn't use handguns. He used like rifles. And then they were talking about how he was made fun of for being poor, but everybody was commenting that the gun he had was very, very expensive gun. I don't know much right. about guns, but people that do were saying, yeah, that's a pretty pricey item he had. So in any case, I don't know much about that, but it's just like, it seems to me that it's very strange. There's something really fucked up about our society.
Yes. Yes.
That is nobody is addressing that, because it's like, no. If there was a time in America when it was a healthier place, and we even talked about how, you know, there were times when kids would bring guns to school because you had target shooting during gym class.
Right.
Right. And so, and so if that was a thing, why, you know, this is not, like, what is going on, right? And it's not the guns. It can't. Now, you could. The problem is also just there's so many more guns here than they could ever collect. So there's a logistical problem. The government also doesn't really push. The other factor is that, see, I actually think there's a couple things going on with that. I think they're never going to do it because they can't. Logistically, they cannot collect people's firearms. People won't turn them in. And it will create a situation where law enforcement is going to have to do a whole bunch of crazy armed standoffs, Waco style, hundreds of thousands, right? And guys will, like, seriously, like boomers and those types, you know, like boomers of all ages will collect in like compounds and like shore up and like be ready, literally just be ready to shoot it out with like the feds. They will right. do it. Okay, yeah. There's a lot of things they won't do. They'll never say nigger. And they'll never criticize Israel, but they'll do that, right?
Yeah.
So they just get that that's the case, and the government is like, they're kind of hiding behind the blaming of these of right-wing whites for this. Like, Chuck Schumer did a speech today where he said, like, how much blood is enough blood and all stuff. So he's just amping people up to hate whites. So this Mexican kid went and shot, like, 17 Mexicans and two white little girls. And Chuck Schumer's out there, like, shaking the finger and blaming white people, right?
Oh, all the Jews are going nuts. Of course. I mean, they're just going nuts. Like, every Jew feels the need to opine about this and say how we got to – I saw a thing, Bette Midler. Yeah. I mean, Jews, like – there was
like,
an article –
Jews, like, why don't you fucking disarm the civilians in Israel?
There was an article in The Atlantic, Mike, that said America's hands are full of blood. And it says, amid our pain and grief, we must face a bitter truth. And I look at who's wrote it, and it's David Frum. And I'm like, aren't you a top-level guy? I had to check. And here's what I put on Telegram when I posted this. I said, this is the quote about him. Frum supported the 2003 invasion of Iraq. He helped write George W. Bush's famous Axis of Evil speech to describe the governments of Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. Frum is a supporter of Israel. So, I mean, he says, and you look at his picture, and he just, it's, he, oh, even God, his picture on the Atlantic, his picture on the Atlantic.
I just want to punch him in the face.
He's a monstrous looking Jew. And it's like, for him to go out and write an article, America's hands are full of blood, this wicked goblin of a war.
But it's not even that, though. It's more than that, though. It's like, aren't you in charge?
Yes.
Like, this is the thing with these people. Like, aren't you the ones that run this place?
Yes.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know, I've seen him. I've seen this dude hundreds of times.
This is his picture from The Atlantic. This is his profile picture. As he's writing this stuff, America's hands are full of blood. I mean, it's just, it's really.
They're like blaming the population. It's like, you're the ones in charge. And like I said, if you're telling us that you cannot protect people and also keep people's rights intact, their basic rights intact, well, then step down. Uh-huh. Step down.
Yeah, yeah.
Give up your power to people that would love to take it over and run this country in a proper way.
Yeah. Like, well, because Americans just don't trust you. I mean, Americans trust – they trust that they will their ability to like dodge bullets in the streets more than they trust the ability of the government to take care of the problem. No, really. I mean, it's just because it's like, you know, if I hold on to my guns and everyone has guns, I may die or my children may die in a school shooting. But if I give up my guns, for sure, my rights are over. You know, there was that quote, the person that was thumping on CNN or something saying that Tucker Carlson and people like him need to be imprisoned or worse, they said.
Carl Cameron was that guy. He's a Jew who was a former Fox News correspondent.
Right, or worse. I mean, what does that mean, right? So it's
what are you talking about, buddy?
What are you talking about?
Can you elaborate on that for a second?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, like, as soon as you turn over your gun, they're just going to say, boy, that was dumb. You know, I mean, it's you disarm and you're going to be Germany on the other end of the Versailles Treaty. I mean, you lay down your arms, they still have their arms.
I like Stryker's point that the Civil Rights Act was America's Versailles Treaty.
Yeah. Well, that's actually what put the idea in my mind for my last speech, because I was thinking about the aftermath of World War II, the big expulsions, you know, and I thought and they were actually in some ways worse than the Versailles Treaty. And I was like, you know, that's absolutely right. It's like we got saddled with a guilt that we had nothing to do with, that we have to pay for forever. And then it's more than that, because it's like you have to give up everything that you built. But no, I find this phenomenon very, very disturbing, and I think it absolutely is reflective of some kind of deep, almost spiritual.
Well, think about this. I mean,
we can
opine on that for a long time and theorize, and nobody can quite get to the heart of what it is. And
right,
race is part of it. Race is part of it, but it's not the only part of it. Like, I don't think these Mexicans deserved what happened to them. That was a terrible thing, no matter what.
And human beings too. I look at these people crying over
there. They're also very different than inner city niggers. They're just like
animals. I feel
those people aren't us, but they're not terrible.
No, they're not.
And they don't deserve it. But the question is, like, we could opine on, like I said, we can opine on, we could theorize on what it is. There's a lot of different things. It's a lot of different things. There's no one cause, but I'm like, this is ultimately the only country in the world where this is happening, and the other countries where it happens sort of are the most adjacent. The all countries also speak English and have a very similar culture to ours. And maybe there's things about, like, places like Britain where they've got a more ancient culture going back a while. They're also more cohesive, and they've got more actual ethnic British people in their country, and they still have some semblance of a society in places that aren't London. You know, these countries that Jews run become just completely dislocated.
Yeah.
And in the end, it's Jewish power. Like, it has to be, because it's the country where Jews have the most more power than they've ever had. I mean, the Jews that are pointing the finger at us, I'm like, fuck you. I've never hurt a person in my life. And I would never dream of murdering anybody, even someone who's, you know, who I consider to be a racial rival to my group. That's not what we're about here. That's not what we're about. And we also don't have power. You do. This is your country. You run this place. You took this place over after, you know, in the early 20th century. You took this place over. You've made it. This is your image. You made this country in your image. We're just here.
Yeah.
You know, we're just here. I mean, it's like in a country. Think about this. In a country where the most hated by the elites, the most hated political dissidents are white nationalists, is also a country where random bloodshed, random public massacres are just regular happenings.
Yeah.
And so I'm actually considered a badge of honor that we are the group that is most hated by the elite that is overseeing this shit show.
Yeah, because I dissent from that. That's what a dissident means.
Right. We are not about what America is about. Like, whatever it is you're doing, we could diagnose it in any different, many ways. Whatever it is you're doing, Jews.
Yeah.
You're creating this.
Yeah.
You are creating this. And you can't pass the buck, because the buck stops at your desk.
Yeah.
It stops at your desk. Because what institutions do you control? Politics, media, finance, academia, everything that shapes the people of this country, everything that shapes the people of this country into what they become, you control it.
Yeah.
And this is what you are overseeing.
Yeah, it's just such an indictment of the whole system. I mean, it's just, I feel like at the root
it's not an indictment of white people that want to keep their gun collection.
No. I feel like at the root of it is,
it's like those people didn't want this country to become what you made it.
Yes, exactly.
Like, those exactly. people didn't
well,
want...
What about the Tim Wise quote? There was a Tim Wise quote that Emily found when we did our Modern Politics. And it was this quote where he was basically bragging about... I don't have it handy, but he was basically bragging about how... actually, maybe I do have it handy. He was bragging about how Americans
David
are
from sitting here. All right, I'm gonna take that off the screen.
I got some more. I got some more ugly Jews.
Right, I'm gonna share the screen with you because I don't think I did that yet. So let me just share the OBS window.
We'll
just sit here looking at David Frum's ugly mug.
Yeah, there we go. That's the enemy. I mean, that's the enemy. That's the reason why. That right there. That guy has been running Americans' policies for 20
He's
more
He's been
than
at the right
years.
Hand of the president for like 30
yeah,
years.
Yeah. Literally writing the president's words for him. Yeah. You know, and has the really
He goes all the way back even Nixon, or maybe right afterwards. Like George W. Bush wasn't his first rodeo. But that was when he was ascending through the ranks. But yeah, he's just one of these typical Jews that's always up in the higher echelons of power. But what's funny is he's in the higher echelons of power and has been for a long time, but only political wonks know who he is. Like, the average person has no clue who this guy is.
Yeah.
He's one of those types, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much in the shadows, you know. Yeah. Okay, here's the Tim Wise quote that Emily found that I will I'll send it to you. You can put it up on the screen. Essentially... She was quoting this because he was saying, you know, that Great Replacement is a murderous conspiracy theory and it can only lead to violence. And then this image, or this quote rather, was used by and there's a fake version of this quote that's a little more explicit that's going around online. But this is the real quote. Mm-hmm. But he says, in the pantheon of American history, conservative old white people have pretty much always been the bad guys, the keepers of the hegemonic and reactionary flame, the folks unwilling to share the category of American with others on equal terms. Fine, keep it up. It doesn't matter because you're on the endangered list. Yeah. Yeah. Unlike the bald eagle or an exotic species of muskrat, you are not worth saving. In 40 years or so, maybe fewer, there won't be any more white people around who actually remember that Leave It to Beaver, Father's Knows Best, Opie Taylor down at the fishing hole, cornpone bullshit that you hold so near and dear to your heart. There won't be any more white folks around who think the 1950s were the good old days because there won't be any more white folks around who actually remember them. So my question is, did we have people like this shooter in the 1950s?
Right.
During the Leave It to Beaver, Father's Knows Best
period? No, we didn't.
Was this kind of thing going on? So what? No. The Jews have been in control of the media, finance,
it's like Tim
of academia.
Weiss. You are bragging here that you and your people took over a society run by these type of people.
Right.
So these type of people had some you know, there was always, you know, corruption and things like that or whatever. They weren't necessarily the people running the politics, but they had a significant control over the society, and the society was to some extent shaped around them. And it was at one point, right?
Yeah.
1950s, I would say, is even like too late to locate this. Everyone talks about the 1950s because that's when TV became a thing, and that's when people started seeing themselves reflected on the TV. But the American small town life had been a thing for two centuries.
Yes.
Prior to that.
Yes.
Right? So, before Opie Taylor and Leave It to Beaver and all that crap, which was a Jewish reflection, and not a terrible one in the early days, right? The early days of Hollywood, they had to reflect America, what America wanted to believe about itself, back to itself in order to get popular, in order to make people like going to the movies and make it a thing. And when you look back, it's actually pretty sinister what they did there, the bait and switch they did with all that. But, they refer to that because it's on TV, and it was on TV even when I was a kid. If you're going to watch like Nick at Night, you could see all these old shows.
Right.
And so, but that life of America was around going back 200 years that people had lived that kind of life. So it's not just that. It's not just like a TV thing. That's just the reference that people use. But those people, those American small town whites and then to some extent, you know, urban whites or whatever, just the white people in America, they would not have created this. And they're not to blame. When you take over the society and tell these people, you don't run it anymore. We're going to run it differently. We're running it just out of pure spite. We're taking over your society and running it in a way that's offensive to you inherently.
Yeah.
What you're also telling me then is all this shit that's happening, you own it.
Yeah.
You own it. And you know who doesn't own it? It's us, and it's the people that you're describing in this post, Tim Weiss. This is your country now. It's your oyster. You've told us so.
Yeah.
You have told us as much. You have bragged to us and rubbed our noses in it that it's your country now. Okay. I believe you.
Yeah.
I fucking believe you, guy. And this is your too. This is yours too. The lunatics consistently running into schools and massacring kids. You did that.
Yeah.
You did that. Now you can blame me because in the country that I would have and the country my ancestors would have and the kind of country that the people you hate would have, people didn't do that. People could just have a gun in their home and that shit didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly all the mechanisms of why that is, but I know it's true.
Well, here's the, you know, people have been posting this around Twitter. So I just looked up because my dad's mentioned this a lot. You can bring this up on the screen. Here's an actual page from a Sears Roebuck catalog.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Look at this. There's so, again, this isn't just, like, single-shot, like, 22 rifles. There's automatic, like pistols, semi-auto military-style, you know, the 1911 was World War I, World War II, military-style, semi-auto pistols. I mean,
dude,
the
these prices are amazing. Wow.
Oh, yeah, they're really good deals.
These are great deals. $10.50? Yeah. I'll take it.
Right. But, I mean, like, there's not only the 1911, but there's the 1905, I think that was, the little 32 caliber. But, I mean, these are,
they got like the little one for your wife here.
Colt
automatic pistol,
John Browning
25
design.
Caliber
like,
seven
I
shot.
I love those Browning designs because they're sort of like Art Deco. You know, they're really really guns look cooler back then. But yeah, this is, you could order these. So, you know, a 45 automatic, a 1911. I mean, you can shoot off a whole clip of a magazine, stick another one in, do another one really fast. If you have like five or six of them, you could go in and shoot off like 50 rounds in no time at all. So why weren't people doing that? Why weren't people getting these and going to schools and just killing all the kids in the school at that time during his corn pone bullshit? Yeah. Leave it to Beaver, Father Knows Best era that Tim Weiss is talking about. When you could get all this, when it was all available, you know. And it's funny too because I'll here's another point. I one time was thinking about the issue of school vouchers and school choice, and is it better to, you know, I had this. This was like 20 years ago when I was first thinking about this issue. I remember thinking like, okay, well, actually we need to reform the public schools. We don't need to just privatize everything. Mm. But I knew a lot of libertarians and conservatives and I would discuss that with them. And so I decided, all right, well, in order to answer this, I want to look at what country has the best school system in the world.
Mm, we all
and
know.
I went and looked and it was Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And by every mark, Japan was like the best. And so I thought to look at it and say, okay, well then this will give me the solution. Do the Japanese have a great public school system, or do they have more private schools? And what I found was they have a mix of both. It's not the whether they're
public or private isn't actually really a major distinction that matters.
Yeah,
that much.
It's because they have an extreme culture of one, because the Japanese are like a master race. You know, I mean, there's a racial component to it, but it's also there's just a very strong cultural component that the Japanese value education, tremendous respect for the figure of a teacher, tremendous respect for learning, for academic achievement, and that's the kind of thing that in America I think we tend to think very mechanistically, like, okay, guns are the problem, ban guns. So in other words, it's okay to have a bunch of people running around in your society who want to shoot up a school.
As long as they just can't get their hands on a gun.
Now the problem's solved.
We're
a totally healthy society. Totally healthy, normal society.
Yeah, think about that. That's a really funny way of putting it. Like, look, we're just giving up on the idea there's not going to be a bunch of psychotic lunatics running around the country. We're punting on that one. We're like, We're just going to punt on that. That's an assumed thing. So we just had to make sure there's no. It's like when you get, when you have like an infant, a new baby, and you have to put up like gates around the stairs and stuff like that. So you know what I mean? Yeah. That's actually not even quite the same thing. But it's like it's just like we know that. In other words, it's basically a known risk that you can't do anything about it. Yeah. So you just have to protect these certain areas, right? Like, yeah. You don't keep sharp objects about where little toddlers can grab them and stuff like that, right? That's normal, but it's like in America, it's like,
yeah. It's a very, it's a very, like I say, it's just mechanistic. It's very much
American. The American focus on mechanism is not even necessarily just, it's a result of the Jewish political culture of how politics are discussed and how policy is discussed and how the country itself and the whole idea of America as an experiment. Because so often you hear elites say that. They don't say it as much anymore because they didn't used to get pushback for saying it, but I remember the American experiment, people talking about that, right? I'm like, well, the experiment is producing toxic waste, right? Like you're in there in the lab, you got like a beaker with, one beaker with Windex, another beaker with like, engine coolant, just so you can have these lurid, blue and green colors in your test tubes, and you mix them together, you're just getting toxic waste.
That's
the experiment. That's your American experiment. You're like the black guy with the goggles on holding the test tube, that old meme, like science. It's like this is your American experiment, and you're like, this is what you've done. And so like you people have talked about your great American experiment. They have talked about it in the pages of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
In the pages of the Atlantic, no less. They've often talked with much self-fellation, self-reverence, like up their own ass about, the democratic American experiment of openness. And this is like, you talk about it, but then what you're saying is in order for you to have that, one, you have to kill off all the old Opie Taylor and Andy Griffith cornpone white people. You have to kill them, right? Why did you say we're just like killing you? Yes. So we have to kill all those people. So no one that remembers when it was different is alive anymore. Like in other words, like literally think about how genocidal that is. It's like, we're changing this and basically eventually like all the people that remember, they're just going to be dead. Yeah. So the memory will be ground into dust. I mean, imagine saying that about Jews.
Oh, yeah. Imagine
saying that about Jews. It's like, hey, Jews, we're going to destroy Israel and we're going to salt the earth. And all you Jews that remember like the gay nightlife in Tel Aviv, well, none, they're all going to be dead. No one's going to be around that's going to remember that.
Yeah.
Or whatever it might be. You guys remember like those of you Jews in Israel that fondly remember Baruch Goldstein like blowing away 30 Palestinians from behind in a mosque. Everyone's going to be dead that remembers that.
Yeah. Speaking of which, here's another one. So I'm glad that they came out and are saying it, but they're dismissing it as Palestinian probe. But Israeli forces deliberately shot Shireen Abu Akle. Palestinian probe finds Israel claims the Al Jazeera journalist was killed during a battle between its soldiers and Palestinian militants. But this is just something that they do all the time.
These
people are the loudest ones to scream about the press. Remember how when
Trump was saying, like, look, Israel, you disarm your civilians. If it's such a good thing to do,
yes.
Then take the fucking Uzis out of every Israeli fucking
settlers,
household.
So-called settlers. I mean, they are the ones. I mean, that shooting you're talking about is like the first time that one at Jazz was talking about this with me. That's maybe the first one. And there was a guy in the comments section on one of our shows that was talking about it. How that was like the first time you had this type of mass shooting in the pattern, that it was. And, what about the Israeli settlers? What about these crazy Jews that just terrorize people that are armed to the teeth, that are terrorizing people? I mean, take their guns away. What's the problem there? I know it's just it's crazy. But this is it's one of these things that of course Israel did this, but I mean,
yeah, yeah, obviously they shot this woman on purpose. Like, it was a headshot. Like, she was probably shot by a sniper. Like, directly, they saw the press pass. Yeah, shot in they the saw head. Her press. They saw her press, like, vest on her. Like, you know, the word press on her bulletproof vest. Or they just shot her in the head. Sniper did it. It's a Jew sniper. Just had, like, blew her away because he wanted to. Because he well, also it was probably policy.
She was among a group of journalists that said wearing helmets and protective vests mark press.
Right, yeah, so no, you know, like I've seen it. We've all seen it what those like people look like, those journalists and those conflict journalists and stuff. Yeah,
and you have to say
it was not an accident. Like, that was a skilled, deliberate shot.
Said it was directly and deliberately. It says that he repeated the Palestinian position that the bullet would not be handed over to the Israelis for study, adding that it had been decided not to even show images to deprive Israel of a new lie. So yeah, there was a total investigation.
They're just going to say, like, Palestinians, like, just can't do investigations.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's how it's just going to be treated. Oh, Palestinian pro? Okay, that's just not real. Like, they're just not actually capable of that, of knowing who killed them.
The AP, here's the AP. I love this headline. Now imagine if it were the reverse. Imagine if the Palestinians deliberately targeted, or not, if they didn't deliberately, but they shot a Israeli journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And if an Israeli probe determined that it was deliberate,
well, the difference how is would the Israel headline doesn't read? Send journalists into the conflict areas because they don't want it recorded.
But it's instead of saying Israel deliberately killed Al Jazeera reporter, probe finds. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Probe finds or study finds.
Yeah, they say Palestinians, right?
Palestinians.
Which already has and of course it's written by some Arab. Yeah. They could just say report :
Yes.
Or they could do : report.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Israel deliberately killed Al Jazeera reporter : report.
You know, this is a good one. You know, what's the acronym that you always use of say no and ask about Israel? You know,
Nazi.
Like, yeah, yeah,
Nazi.
That's right. Yes, that's right. So this would be a good one to ask a journalist about.
Say no. Ask about Zionism in Israel.
Yeah. This particular.
Do you approve of the killing of journalists? Is that bad? Yeah. Okay, so then you're against what Israel did, right?
Yes. Right. Exactly. I mean, they destroyed a whole building in the last thing, the one building that was documenting. That's the other thing about these journalists.
Dude, when I put that in my article, because that was like – I put something about that in the intro to the article I wrote on how Israel is controlling all the refugee relocation centers going into Europe. And some Jew – people were sharing it a lot. And like some Jew was like – I just saw a thread. Some guy sent me some screenshots of a thread where like – some Jew on Reddit or something like that was very angry about it. And the guy was like, so what exactly, basically saying this is just propaganda, it's all lies or whatever. He's like, well, give me a specific lie. And so the Jew sent him back just like the first paragraph with all the stuff about like how they destroyed the building to keep the press from seeing what was going on in the war and stuff. And he underlined it. He's like, there's no proof of this. There's no proof. You know what I mean? He's just like, he was just like picking. And he said, like, whoever wrote this, he's like, this is just a very poorly written. So he wasn't even, he was attacking like the writing. First of all, it wasn't poorly written. It was a well-written article. But he's like, this is very poorly written. It's like, I don't know what kind of amateur like put this together, but look at all these. You know, it was just really funny how he didn't ever even get to the main assertion of the article. He was focusing on the fact of like the fact that and he was going with like, it's no proof that it was deliberately bombed. There's no proof that this was their intention when it happened. Like Israel says it was an accident or it was, you know what I mean? It's just like, get the fuck out of here. Right. Like, don't, you know, and it's like, he's trying to, because what he was doing, it was a typical Jewish thing. He was trying to move the debate from what the guy wanted to talk about, which was the Jewish control over refugees going into Europe. That's pretty irrefutable. Now, the other stuff is irrefutable, too, but he was pushing the debate back to what he wanted to argue about.
Yeah.
Which what he wanted to argue about, and he wanted to also make it all about that. And so the tactic when Jews started doing that is be like, no, that's not the assertion we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're talking about the refugee centers. What do you have to say about that? You know, you'll never – at that point, the Jew will leave. I've debated with Jews many times on Twitter and things like that, and they will eventually, once you pin them down, once you don't play their game – where you don't let them relocate the argument to wherever they want it to be, and you continue to bring them back to what you want to talk about, and to which is exactly what I did with Peter Savodnik in the famous now Nazi video that I put up where I had the debate with that journalist. which was like 28 minutes until the guy just hung up on me because I wouldn't talk about what he wanted to talk about. But anyway, which is the lesson in how to talk to Jews on that video. It's like a master class in how to do it. You just never give them an inch. You only talk about what you want to talk. You have to just do back to them what they do to you. Yeah. But I would say, yeah, that's just an aside. But yeah, I mean,
it's crazy. I mean, when you think about the fact of how they try to make it like a journalist is something special or something sacred, and what scum journalists are.
Hitler has a great quote about that too.
But
oh, man, I want to find
think
it.
Of these. Think of let me just say, think of these journalists that are actually going there, knowing that Israel has a pattern of doing this. That a sniper will target you with a headshot. So in other words, it's the old thing. It's just like with Trey Garrison. It's like when someone is the rare case where there's actually a journalist that has guts, you know, does that person actually get any credit for it, you know, or they attacked in the case of, you know, Andy Ngo. I mean, he physically is attacked in the case of these Palestinians. And that's the other funny thing is that, you know, that if they could hear, they would just shoot that guy in the head with a sniper rifle. They would do the same thing to Trey. They would do the same thing to anybody that goes out there and reports on stuff if they could get away with it in this country. And that's the funny thing. You know, people, you always see this certain sort of online thing when people get very, like, upset when you talk about Palestinian issue. It really pisses me off because it's like you get to see the hypocrisy here of the Jews. It's on full display. The whole world can see it every single day. It's in the headlines. Today, it's in the headlines again. This woman journalist, they targeted her with a sniper rifle and shot her in the head. These same people that use journalism as a weapon. I mean, come on. It's just like, yeah.
Well, because they understand what it is. They get only Jews because they understand journalism isn't a neutral activity. Mm-hmm. And the Palestinians seem to understand. They understand that when you report on what they're doing, like you will, you're damaging them, right?
Yeah. The guy in the comments, he said, and by the way, if people have questions, do the usual thing. Post them in the comments. I'll be browsing them from time to time. We can get to some questions. Yeah. But a guy said, after they shot the Palestinian reporter, the cop showed up at the funeral and beat up the pallbearers. Yeah, that's right. The Israeli police attacked the pallbearers of the funeral.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, and then Putin's the bad guy. I mean, like, what the hell?
Right.
What the hell? I mean, at the very least, by their own standards, there should be sanctions on Israel. Just sanctions for human rights. You know, just human rights.
Oh,
sanctions.
Yeah. No. And they've actually been worried about it in the past that it would happen.
Yeah.
They've been – that this is something that they have in the past been concerned that could happen to them.
Yeah.
That they could actually get, like, hoisted on their own canard here and that this sort of thing would actually happen to them. But yeah. Anyway, I was trying to look for that passage that Hitler has about like the hypocrisy of journalists like congratulating themselves on how great they are. It's really funny. Oh, yeah. It's really funny. I think it's in chapter three where he talks about. I won't be able to find it on the. If I had my copy sitting right here, I could, but it's in the other room and I don't want to go grab it. But getting it from an online version would just be impossible right now. But anyway, it's one of my favorite passages. But yeah, we don't have to talk about that right now. But yeah, I think that this is a rhetorical point I think people should start working with, because I think that this is something that we have not done, and even I haven't done in the past. And these latest events have just made me really just tired of getting the blame for shit like this, right? And just fed up with it. And I think what you can't do, and I think for so long white Americans, even the gun rights people, and it's understandable, but I think the tactics should change. For so long, they still took a kind of a rhetorically defensive posture. Like, look, we didn't do this. We have our rights, you know what I mean? Or something along those lines, right? I think we need to point the finger at them. Be like, you're the ones in charge of this fucking country, and you can't stop this?
Yeah,
you can't stop this without coming after me? The guy who didn't do it? Why is your solution always coming after innocent people? That's why this is happening, because you can't actually do anything about it. Like, I think
why don't you have the credibility? I mean, that's the other thing. It's not just incompetence on their part. It's malicious. Well,
whatever
it's like it's you don't have the credibility with your own people that your own people
they don't trust you not to politicize a mechanism for removing access to firearms for mentally ill people.
Yes.
Because everybody says, I mean, ask a conservative about that. And it's not just white nationalists. White nationalists will tell you they'll put white nationalists on the – they'll make white nationalism a mental illness. Conservatives will tell you they're just going to make conservatism a mental illness. And they're not wrong.
They're not wrong. They're absolutely right.
You know, so it's like, it's like, no, they're whatever it is,
authoritarian.
They will just use it politically. They're just going to use it. It's not. It's because it's not. It's not really about. Like David Frum doesn't give a shit about these beaners that this guy killed.
No.
He doesn't give any fucks. No. What he sees is the opportunity to create a politicized mental illness database. You know, and that's the other thing. Like the, another thing that the guys that the, some of the gun people talk about is they want to just come and seize all guns. I think that their first move would be something like a mental illness database. But see, people are onto that too.
People are onto it.
People are onto that too. They get it. They get that that will be. I mean, they've seen. Everybody saw what they did with January 6th.
Yeah.
They understand how politicized that was. They understand how after this whole summer, an entire summer of black havoc and blacks and anarchists just wreaking havoc just for no reason, you know, other than the propaganda, just imbibing anti-white propaganda and nihilistic anti-white propaganda. They just went out and they just burned cities and broke. And they, a lot of times they had no politics. They were doing it because they were bored. They were doing it because they were fun. They were doing it because they didn't give a shit. They had no sense of the future or the past or anything. They just, let's do this for the fucking hell of it, right? Whatever, YOLO, you know?
Yeah.
And like that's why a lot of that shit was going on. So after an entire summer of that with the police doing nothing and like kneeling down for it,
yeah, then, the police are kneeling down. Okay, so you're a gun owner, and you live in a city like Pittsburgh.
And police are kneeling down to black crime.
You see the chief of police. You see the chief of police.
You see him kneeling
Perdudo.
To a bunch of criminals.
Yes, kneeling down.
What are you going to do? You're going to go out and buy another gun.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, you don't have faith in the. And see, this is funny because this is the basic function.
But after the point I was making was after all of that. A few months later, in that winter, white people did a political thing. Whatever we might think of their goal, it was a political. It was a political thing that they were doing. It wasn't random violence. It wasn't nihilistic.
You mean January 6th?
Yes, they went and they did that, and the entire system came down on them. I mean, do you remember in the months after January 6th when you would drive down the highway, all the marquees would be lit up about any information about the people that were involved? Like even at that point, like the marquees on the highway, you know, those signs, the digital signs.
I mean, I never saw one, but
I saw several of them firsthand where they said information about terrorism in January 6th, like call the FBI. They had them at, they had signs at truck, and the thing, when you put signs like that at truck stops where the people that are there are sympathetic to the January 6th people, if not actually January 6th people themselves.
Right.
They definitely know them or, you know, or they're sympathetic to them. You're just rubbing it in their face. We hate you.
Yeah.
Now you have to feel like you in this truck stop, if you're a trucker, a place where you used to feel at home. Now you feel like the fucking feds are watching you, right?
Yes.
And so, I mean, it's just like when that happens, it's like then you come around and you're like, hey, let's work together and like try and beat. It's like, nah, fuck you.
Yeah.
No, fuck off. Like, there's none of that. Yeah. We're not doing that. Like, just,
Yeah.
No. And it's like, no one's going to trust. Like, listen, we got to deal with mental illness. We just want to, we really just want to make sure it's the mentally ill people that don't get the guns. And I'm like, I guarantee you, how many times you've heard racism is a mental illness?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? And they're going to classify it as such.
Like I say, I mean, I'm glad that white America isn't so stupid that even with all their false prophets and their Pied Pipers and their, you know, phony leaders like Donald Trump, I'm glad that white Americans just get it instinctively.
Well,
and
they instinctively here's the thing about white America, the white conservative America, and it's not just boomers either. We say boomers. Boomers is like a existential thing. It's not just a generation anymore, right?
Right.
It's just, like, anybody can be a boomer, right? It's just it's a certain way of being. It's a certain gestalt, right? Of a way of existing as a boomer.
It's a gestalt. I mean? The boomer gestalt.
Right. And we all know what it is when you can't describe it, but you know what it is when you see it.
Yes.
That's what a gestalt basically is. But in any case, so boomers, you know, they know that the system is out to get them. They can't quite pinpoint why or what it is. And the thing is, this is why where we come in is so important. And that's why they do everything they can to separate us from them. And there are some that are so entrenched in whatever their false narratives are, their phony things are. And there are some of them that are really dumb and they like Israel and stuff like that. Those are the more reprehensible ones. But there's a lot of them out there that probably don't give two fucking shits about Israel.
Yeah,
frankly, they might hate Muslims, but that's
another
thing.
It's like the famous thing that happened with George Lincoln Rockwell when I think it was Chicago. I forget where it was, but there's this famous thing that happened where there was forced busing or forced housing going on, and the whole community was up in arms about it. And Rockwell showed up and with his guys and was handing out American Nazi Party signs and flags, and like basically like the whole crowd were waving. I don't know if they were waving Nazi flags, but they were holding American Nazi Party stuff because they were so pissed off about what was happening that they give me that, some of that. Hey, Rockwell's here, you know. Oh yeah, American Nazi Party, give me some of that.
Well, about this, like Rockwell. I know you have a lot of admiration for him, and I'm like, you know, I see what he was doing, but I also think like he did a lot of stuff that was unnecessary.
I will say this. I didn't always. My original gripe with my dad was our original argument when I was like 17 was I used to argue with him like hell about Rockwell. And I told him Rockwell was an idiot. I didn't say he was an idiot, but I said he was getting National Socialism wrong. He was doing clownish tactics.
Well, he was doing exhibitionism.
It was only after really studying him quite a bit that I came to realize what a total hero he was. He's someone that, if just on at face value, sometimes you can see there was a great method to his madness. And the thing I admire,
I know
about him,
you think that this is something we just don't agree on, but my point is this.
Effective at the time. I think it was effective at the time. I think that given the state of the media at the time, it was that's how you have to.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not convinced, but whatever. My point is that though about that is that I think about like I'm like almost jealous. Like I think about the movements of the past and like the ground on which they walked and what they had the fundamental material they had to work with. Like I mean, if the NJP with existing as who we are and what we are about now and how we present now existed, if we were back at the time when whites would still go out in the streets and yell and scream that like they were going to be putting blacks into their kids' school or busing their kids around and stuff, I mean, that would just be we would just be swept off our feet by the people. You know what I mean? It's just like the way we can do these things and handle. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Well, but again, it was to break through the media stranglehold. It was and literally that was back then. It was ironclad. There were the three networks.
No, I understand. And that was it. I understand what it was, but the way you also do it is by going at that point. The strategy isn't to get on the media. It's to go out among the people. Like, just go to those type of protests.
I get what you're saying. You know? I would say this also. One of the big things that I realized with Rockwell that was a major, like, a moment for me was that the era in which he existed was, like, when he was operating, was basically, like, the late 50s or early 60s. You know, by I think he was killed in 67. So he really, I mean, his peak years should have been when all the shit hit in after the late 60s, and he was killed.
They basically had to kill him. I mean, it would have been different. It would have gotten a lot crazier. Like,
but the thing that I realized was when I was thinking about National Socialism, because I didn't like at the time when I was younger in the 90s, and I would argue with my father about this. I didn't like how just the crude racism of Rockwell, like the nigger this, nigger that. And I also didn't like the fact that he was not talking in terms
did they call it like the hate bus and shit like that? I think that's fucking stupid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, dumb. But see, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing.
Stupid, but whatever.
But here's the thing, that when I realized it later, I was thinking about it, and I realized that, you know, the thing about National Socialism, there's a racial component to it, and then there's this like a pro your Aryan people racial component, and then there's the socialism, which is this sort of anti-capitalist racial community idea. And if you were a man with that ideology, that worldview, I should say, in the late 50s, early 60s, I mean, essentially, socialism is just going to sound like, I mean, you have Khrushchev over there threatening the country with nukes, like that's socialism, you know, and you also have a country where the problems of the working class were about as solved as they would ever get in this country. I mean, union membership was at a peak at that time. The ratio of CEO to worker pay was the lowest it ever was. I mean, the white American blue collar worker, that was basically like the peak of strong unions, of strong labor, of being able to be like a white man going. So it's funny because when I thought about it, I realized that our situation today is much more comparable to Hitler's time or Father Coughlin and Huey Long than it is Rockwell's, because for him, race was defined. The two big issues of his era were the Cold War and the Civil Rights Movement. And the Civil Rights Movement was black power versus white power. And that's how he cast it, you know, because that was it. Now we're dealing with, you know, blacks are just one element in this whole constellation of other races that we're dealing with. And Jews are much more powerful than they are today. And capitalism is much more predatory than it is today. At that time, I don't even know how he did it to peddle a form of socialism at all to Americans at the height of the Cold War, you know, when the working class was doing great. It was very difficult. So it's very different times. Like I say, I feel like our times today are closer to the Weimar period.
Yeah. They absolutely are, but they're the other, but again, there's also advantages that the Nazis had that we don't have. They had a much smaller country. They had a much more tightly packed country where people could be with other people much in a much easier way. They were all German. Like, the country was still significantly racially German. They're just, you know, like overwhelmingly so. And it was such that even in the countryside in Germany, the people didn't even really know that things had changed all that much. I mean, they knew that they had lost the war and such. But they didn't know, like, what the hell was... I mean, one of the things they did, I mean, the Entente Kunst and all that stuff, they just, like, went out and showed people, like, look at this shit. Like, look at this crap.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway, I don't know. I guess the thing is with the period that he was operating in, it was race, and it was, and you could talk openly about race.
You should read a book about him. There's a couple good biographies of him.
I know. But here's the thing, then, Warren. If it's a good idea, why don't we do it?
Well, it's not necessarily that. It's important.
Why don't we dress up in Nazi uniforms and ride around the hate bus?
Well, I mean, we got the internet now. Like, there's
that's not the point, though. Like, why don't we present that way on the internet then?
Because you don't need the same sort of theatrical shock tactics to break through to reach people.
I disagree with that analysis. I don't think he needed it then either. But that's fine. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Well, like I say, you should read about it. Check this out, though. I'm gonna send you an article.
There's gonna be people that are gonna be just shocked that that's my opinion on Rockwell. I like his book, but I just think that I think the clownish factor just undermined his credit. It undermined him as a serious person. Like he was trying to make the transition. I don't think he would have been able to do it. I don't think. But then why did he have to make the transition? If it was like, if he, you know, it's like, I don't know. I just, it's like, if you make the clownish riding around on a hate bus thing your thing, that's who you're going to be, right? That's who you're going to be.
Yeah. No, I, that was my first impression.
I mean, I've like barely skirted being that myself. Like I came this friggin' close to doing that. And I was like, no,
frankly, Mike, I mean, that's William Pierce. That was his take on Rockwell.
Yeah, I agree with him.
I mean, he wanted to completely do it. Totally different, you know, and that's really the...
Which is not to say you're not militant about it. I disagree with the kind of shit test that goes on that, like, in order to be radical and militant, you have to do things that are, like, dumb, that seem, like, stupid to ordinary people. Like, I don't think so.
Yeah, I will say
I just disagree with that take, and I feel like it's a shit test And it's like that thing of like the cartoon that I saw someone post recently where it was like jump off the cliff and the guy's like no and the guy's like wow cliff cucks be seething and the guy's like jumps off. Like I was just dying at that because that's so much of how this discourse goes, right?
Yeah.
But whatever.
I think Rockwell's greatest accomplishment was just setting the example of a kind of fearless leader. When you see his, there's a lot of clips of him that are still popping up on YouTube. I see stuff that's just that I've never seen before, where he's speaking and he's like just talking to reporters. He's speaking on universities, and the guy was so smart. And
well, that's my thing is he was really good.
Yeah.
So like I just think he didn't need to. And look, even when he was walking around with the signs that said like Jewish communist, that's fine. Like I didn't have any, but he was still wearing like normal clothing of what he looked like the kinds of people he was trying to influence. I think that's actually kind of important thing to do. Well, I don't like the idea
a bad trend, you know. I mean, it started a bad trend of
and I don't like the idea of he was doing costume Nazi stuff, and the reason that the Nazis did that is because these guys were military veterans, all of them. So well, they Rockwell were comfortable too, dressing
that
up.
Whole generation were they were
all I mean, of them. Well, yes, Rockwell was a military uniform. Veteran too. I understand that, but yeah. It was different because literally every person in Germany had fought or was in like this was a group of people that were just comfortable. It wasn't a costume for them because they weren't imitating. But, I mean, they weren't imitating something that they weren't.
Okay, but I mean, a lot of the young people that were coming into Hitler's movement were not veterans, you know, early on there, and it would have been the same for Rockwell too. Like I say, it's not. Trust me when I say it's not a sentimental attachment to Rockwell's tactics that I value him. I've read a lot about why he did the things he did, and
I feel
and
like what that's post. I've read it too. I feel like it's post hoc rationalization for wanting to do extreme stuff. That's just my view.
Maybe. I mean, it was an extreme time, though. I mean, it was a period where there was just, yeah. You know, there was. I mean, communism was.
I mean,
was
the other thing is, I don't want to put too fine a point on it in this because like, my only thing is like, I don't put too fine a point on it because there's a lot of other people who were doing really stupid, retarded shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, basically, so it's not like even, like, this is the biggest deal ever, and I won't still, like, stick up for them or defend them, because I will, but I feel like there was some lost potential due to that stuff. Like,
well,
there
William was, Pierce, William Pierce definitely felt that way, but I feel like Pierce, I think some of the, and again, Pierce is another guy that...
Pierce had his own problems, but, like, again, I don't want to make this show about, like, going back over this stuff. Like, no one, like, I want to be talking about.
Yeah, No. I mean, me neither.
Pierce was also a total like alienating spurg. Like he scared people and was weird.
Well, I think the problem
with
Pierce was that he decided to not do a mass movement style thing at all. You know, that was his takeaway from Rockwell. Was I'm not even going to do. I'm going to build the vanguard for the future, which I think. Can be a cop out for not directly speaking to the people. You know,
that's a definite cop out for not bringing your stuff to the people because you're not confident that they're going to hear it. Like at least I'll give this to Rockwell; he was confident enough in white people that they wanted to hear what he had to say. That he would just go tell it to him. Pierce wasn't, frankly.
Yeah.
Well, and if you look, my other criticism of Pierce. This is we're going to do this. Might as well do it. My criticism of Pierce. Is if you read his books, and it's not even that they're like cheesy fictions or whatever, because I actually enjoy reading them. The books are like Deus Ex Machina, except that Machina is at the beginning.
I know. Like how did the organization get started?
Like, yeah, like it's right there. It's already there. It's like the organization exists. And the same in Hunter. It's like a fucking Fed. He's like part of a secret group of Feds. That are like white nationalists that are like that groom this guy who's literally just murdering innocent people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean that book is like fucking.
Yeah.
You don't get me wrong. It's a
funny
fun
because
read,
I have his. Like, I have this Best of National Vanguard and Best of Attack, and his nonfiction articles that he wrote were amazing. I mean, they're up there right with everything, the best stuff. But he's known for his fiction. But yeah, I just think that the mass movement. That's the thing I love about Rockwell. And to bring this back around to what we started talking about, So
what's this article you sent me here?
Oh, well, we're going to get into this in a second. Okay. The thing that just let me wrap that up is just the idea that white America is instinctively smarter than they seem sometimes. And that was my point about the Rockwell anecdote. It's like they get what's happening. And in the circumstance they were in at that time, Rockwell comes with literal, you know, American Nazi Party stuff. And they're like, hell yeah. Yeah. They're glad you're here. Americans are getting that way when it comes to when the government, there's a mass shooting and the government wants to do things. They just see through it. They just know.
NJP is getting a lot of attention in circles that are far outside of the typical circles of the community, you know, the online community. Like they're just boomers are sharing your speech.
Yeah.
They're sharing it. And libtards are like flipping out about it. They're like, what? And eventually it's going to be a thing. There was a time period where if a boomer stumbled across some of our stuff and like liked it and shared it, then people would be like, that's Nazi stuff. And they would like shamedly like delete it disavow it or whatever. And they're just not doing that anymore.
No.
They're not going to do that anymore.
It's something that we decided on that I'm very proud of is that we always decided to make our speeches something that's accessible to regular people. That when like a normal person can look at our speeches and it's not going to be, you know, buried in memes and the sort of the talk.
It's legitimate. And people even from other countries that can understand English or could get a translation of it would also understand what we're saying.
Yeah.
So
that's very important. I think people don't people take for granted how important that is to just make your case to the people.
And the other thing is and you made this point about it early is that when people hear that somebody's making a speech, it puts them in a different mindset about looking at it, right? Like so when they look at it, when they watch it and listen to it, it's like, okay, this guy is making a speech. He's going to be making a point. Yes. And so it kind of bypasses a lot of roadblocks, right? And it's like if somebody's willing to listen to – if someone's not willing to listen, there's a lot of people with just ADD that's not going to do it, right? Just never going to listen to political speech ever. But the kind of person that will, even if they're an enemy, right, even if they're ideologically, politically against us – if they will sit down and listen to someone do a 20 to 40 minute, usually their speeches fall somewhere in that range. I've never tried to go past 40 minutes.
Right.
20 to 40 minute speech on politics. And I also think that our speeches are entertaining enough that once you start watching, you're just going to keep watching. It's not a slog. You usually hear political speech, oh God, shoot me in the head, right?
Right.
But
right,
our speeches are not boring slogs like that. They're actually exciting and fun to listen to, and then the crowd reactions make them more you know, exciting for people to watch. But you've already kind of gotten to the point where someone's like, okay, this guy's making a speech. So if I've decided I'm going to listen to a speech, that means I've opened my mind to sitting down, watching this guy talk, and listening to what he has to say and evaluating it.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas when you're involved in like political dialectic and discourse, or if you're looking at a newspaper article, you assess like who wrote this first, like what outlet is this, what's their line, you know, and all that shit kind of like falls by the wayside if it's something that you don't know about and it's like a speech. Or even if you do know about it, or it's just like it just bypasses all of these filters and roadblocks in people's minds. For those type of people willing to listen to a speech. Now, there's a lot of people that aren't going to do it at all. But a lot of people have said, like so many people have said, I've shown it to my brother-in-law, I've shown it to my dad, and they always agree. Now, oftentimes they agree and then give, oh, I agree with everything, but – and it's like at some point, my thing is like that's fine as long as they say the first part. Right, because they always say like when people say but after a statement, it's what comes after the but that's important. In our case, I don't necessarily think so because I think what comes before it is important. Because what comes after the but, all that is their mental roadblocks or their fear. But at some point, the question is going to be that fear. What are you getting out of that? Like, what is that doing for you? Because typically the fear is supposed to protect you. It makes you safer.
Yeah.
But this fear doesn't.
No.
It doesn't help you.
No.
And I think more and more people are going to understand, well, that it's just residual. It's just a block. It's just a shibboleth I've got. It's just something in my brain that's just been programmed there, or just I feel, you know, the Jewish programming from when I was a kid is kicking in, or just my fear of the system or my fear of losing my livelihood and my family or whatever. But at some point, it's like, well, you know, look at what we're telling you and what we're saying, and look at the people running this country.
Yeah.
What, like, make your choice, you know? I mean...
Well, here's a thing in the news that actually ties back to something we talked about before.
I'm curious what this has to do with anything, but yeah.
So you know what this ESG thing is?
What is it? Just explain it.
ESG is environmental, social, and corporate governance.
Okay, yeah. Boomers hate this, by the way.
Yeah, well, rightly so. I'm just learning about it. Apparently, the thing that where Elon Musk, where Tesla was downgraded, this is how they did it, ESG score.
Mm-hmm.
And this Jew, here's the full picture. Look at this. You talk about
Gary Gensler.
Yeah. Like, it's just this picture.
This guy's definitely Jewish. I mean, you look it up.
And look at his face. Like, here's the face of the
Chairman of the Security and Exchange Commission.
Yeah. This guy is just the biological Jew, right? But but what this is, this proposal. So here's an article from Fox News, which is going to give you like the what their take on it is. I'll send it to you. It says SEC's proposed ESG rule will leave small farms in the lurch. Lawmakers from both parties say farmers would be forced to give onerous climate data.
Oh, there's the man himself.
Yeah.
Oh, God, Klaus Schwab. Yeah.
Under SEC's proposed ESG rule, lawmakers warn. More than 100 House members from both parties are attacking a proposed SEC rule they say will put unworkable regulatory requirements on small farms. Now, it's supposedly a climate change reporting thing, enhanced and standardization of climate-related disclosures for investors. But this is basically a Jewish attack on small white farmers, obviously. What's interesting about this thing, so, like, Wikipedia has an article that you could tell is being – there's, like, a
– Now, I guarantee you there's also – I mean, basically what this is – okay, so what I'm seeing is this is a thing where for a long time – they were letting people just say our shit is environmentally this or that, right? And so now they're putting actual standards that they have to meet in order to say that or something like that. And then if they don't meet them, you can't work with. So they're basically using the environmental thing as a very typical thing that conservatives would be against.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably right to be against it.
Well, in theory, so I just sent the Wikipedia article on this, which, like I say, there's obviously like an edit war in progress now.
Right. The Jews always win those.
Because
willpower, you know.
Yeah, is an approach to evaluating the extent to which a corporation works on behalf of social goals that go beyond the role of a corporation to maximize profits on behalf of the corporation's shareholders. Typically, the social goals advocated within an ESG perspective include working to achieve a certain set of environmental goals, as well as a set of goals having to do with supporting certain social movements, and a third set of goals having to do with whether the corporation is governed in a way that is consistent with the goals of the diversity, equity, and inclusion movement. So, again, the wedge that they're using here is the environment. Like, we all want to save the planet, right? You know, no one wants to drink poison water or you know, die from smog or whatever. That's the wedge. But piggybacked on that, and even that, the way they use it, obviously, is often just completely illegitimate and is just an excuse. But they pair it with these other things. And apparently, this is a friend of mine was just telling me about this, how this is like this is a big, big deal, and it's picking up a lot of steam. And so it's a way for what's great about it, Mike, is it's a way for. You know how you and Stryker often have talked about how the Jews don't just – it's like a myth that they just pursue profit above
all. Oh, yeah, 100%.
And how they're willing to, spend money to achieve social goals.
Yeah.
This is basically putting a label on that, you know? It's putting a term on that. It's saying, oh, well, here's these corporations just – they're being responsible, you know? They're being socially responsive.
They use that term. I mean, BlackRock uses it. I mean, there's a few different terms they use. I guess one of them is this ESG crap. Another one is the stakeholder capitalism. That's another one that they put out there where they're like, it's not about just, they even say it's not just shareholders. It's also like stakeholders. And that means like, they talk about like communities that we affect and stuff. In other words, just doing anti-white stuff with corporations.
Yeah.
Basically what that just means. Just like, are you using your corporation to not just make money, but also do anti-white stuff?
Yeah. Good. Are you getting rich while fucking over the world? And also, are you doing enough to destroy white people? And
Are you doing enough to destroy the corn pone, Opie Taylor, Andy Griffith for white guy?
See, it says at this Wikipedia thing, in the third paragraph down, in less than 20 years, the ESG movement has grown from a corporate social responsibility initiative launched by the United Nations into a global phenomenon representing more than $30 trillion in assets under management. In the year 2019 alone, capital totaling $17.67 billion flowed into ESG-linked products, an almost 525% increase from 2015, according to Morningstar. So it's taking off.
It's
exploding. And see, they're making it, and conservatives are making it, all about environmental stuff. So they're saying the unintended consequence of it is just greenwashing.
This is actually not necessarily conservatives that are saying this, though, because there's probably libtard saying this, too. Critics claim ESG-linked products have not had and are unlikely to have the intended impact of raising the cost of capital for polluting firms.
Right.
So, but that's probably because that's not the goal.
That's not the goal. That's not the goal. If they just made it about diversity and inclusion and equity,
well, why is it? Like, well, here's this? The thing. Why is ESG? Why is environmentalism lumped in with this diversity, equity, and inclusion crap?
Well, that's the big question, Mike.
Why can't you just say, hey, listen, company that makes something that could be toxic to the environment, you're gonna have to dispose of that in a cleaner way. We're not just letting you dump it or something like along those lines. Right. And if you do, you're going to get fined out the ass.
Yes.
Right. Like, why is it not just that shit? Right. Why can't we just do that? Like, that's just the normal thing. Or listen, every car has to have, I mean, like the Clean Air Act actually worked.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't used to destroy Whitey. Like the Clean Air Act was actually used to set like vehicle. I mean, people bitch about, oh, I got to take my car in for inspection, all this crap, but the air is clean.
Yeah.
America's air is pretty clean.
Yeah.
It is. It's a pain in the ass, but in the end, is it that much of a pain in the ass? It's not that big of a deal. And it's not like, oh, yeah, I got to get my car inspected. Oh, God, screwing over Whitey. No, this is very different, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is what they always do. And it's really funny because I feel like you can see what the agenda here is. I mean, literally, all you got to do is look at that picture of what's his name's profile and you see what the agenda here is. There's a biological agenda here, and it ain't saving the planet. It's the biological Jew versus the Aryan. Right,
like they don't ever care about that. That's not what it is.
Right.
And so, like, it's funny because you do get libtards that do care. And then they criticize these things, but guess what? Their criticism goes absolutely fucking nowhere.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing here is that conservatives, there's a natural backlash against this. But
oh, here we go.
It's funny because, well, let me just say, what's funny about this also is that unlike the EPA, this isn't just big government. Increasingly, the regulations that are being put on you are big capital. You know, it's private capital that's setting that's regulating you according to,
of course,
leftist values. It's not. And so and that's again,
they're also doing it to make sure that, and it's not even just like the old libertarian take is private capital gets involved in government regulation in order to regulate the competition out of business. That's partly true, but they are also getting involved to regulate. There's a specific racial political angle to it, so that it's like not just that the competition is regulated out of business, but anybody with different values is regulated out of business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and it's basically, fact, okay. They're saying, like, so again, when they say this, it's like, you know, I was watching today, Anthony Blinken made a statement about China, and he says, you know, he's talking about their strategy for China, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like not like a big defender of China or whatever. But it's also like I'm not hugely offended by China. Like I understand China's doing what's good for China, right? And so like whatever, right? That's something that should just be understood. But they're saying like China, he's saying China is the only country that increasingly has like the market and financial and technological power to challenge the United States. And but he didn't even say the United States. He said something like the open international order or something like that, or inclusive international order. That's what he said. The inclusive international. They're not even using New World Order now. It's the inclusive international order. So it's like it's just like he's like China, and then they're talking about basically. He was talking about basically like we can't directly confront China, so we have to shape. We said we have to shape the strategic environment around them, I guess, meaning like set little fires all around them that they have to constantly put out so they can't ever like gather their forces or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is what Jews have done to white people, by the way. That's how they've done it to us. They've set fires everywhere. We have to constantly be trying to put them out all our entire lives. And we're like, we can't focus on the big thing until this fire's out. Well, this fire's out. And it's like, nah. You have to just like at some point just step over those fires and put out like the massive inferno. But yeah, and so the funny thing is it's sort of like he's basically talking about ultimately just like attacking another country. And he's saying they can't continue their aggressive moves and all this stuff. But he framed everything in terms of like the values-based inclusive international order. And so it's just
Jesus.
All of that shit is just Jewish power. All that shit is mean, just Jews running things. Like it's just like – it's like the inclusive of Jews.
Yeah.
Like inclusive of Jews are included and really exclusive of Jews. I mean, exclusive to Jews, rather.
Yeah.
It's just the
guy
Jew
in our, guy in our comic section, and I want to make this clear because somebody, it may have been the same guy posted this before, said that the index Tesla was taken off of was not the S&P 500.
Okay.
Tesla was taken off of the S&P ESG 500 index,
okay.
Which is an index of the top 500 companies that meet that stupid ESG standard. In other words, an index
so it's
for
like
investing by virtue signaling shitlibs. Yeah.
Well, but not I mean, even. It's for Jews. I mean, because virtue signaling shitlibs aren't investing in markets. This is for Jews.
Yes.
This is another index to tell specifically the top level elite investor Jews. These are the companies that are like are the other companies that aren't on this are the ones we're going to try and financially destroy.
Yeah.
The
yes,
ones that
exactly.
are on it, the ones that are on it are the ones that are going to promote because they're the ones that are run by us, other Jews, or are just playing ball.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So that's what that is. Ultimately, it's another way for Jews to differentiate because ultimately the goal is, I mean, why would you even have this if the goal was not to have like the people that aren't on this list go away?
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
if the goal wasn't for the companies that aren't ESG rated to disappear or go out of business, then what's the point of it?
Yeah.
There can't possibly be another point. The point is every company has to comply or go out of business. And for Elon Musk, the compliance is like just stop trying to buy Twitter or whatever it might be. And, you know, it's funny. When I made the prediction in my last speech about Elon Musk and Twitter, I felt kind of dumb because it was literally 2 days later that it was announced that like the deal had been done.
I heard you say this.
And then,
it was like, you were vindicated.
And then it turns out, like, 3 weeks later, it's like, oh, shit, no, everything I said was right.
Right.
And I remember
Jazz
Hands at first said to me, like, yeah, guy, like, don't worry about it. Trust me. It's probably not happening. And I was like, okay, all right. I guess you're right. Well, he's like, don't feel dumb. He's like, it's not a done deal yet in any sense. So, you know, you didn't make it just a totally wrong prediction. Like,
I put this on Telegram and I said, Larry Fink of BlackRock wielding unimaginable power to impose anti-white policies on America and the world through so-called ESG is the classic definition of what Hitler called international finance Jewry in his famous speech of January 30th, 1939. Yeah. How does Ted Cruz respond?
It's not
by
real
defending
capitalism.
The honor of capitalism.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know.
This is incredible to me. This is the way that they are. I mean, you have the Republican Party. I don't know if you saw, Mike, all the niggers that Trump endorsed and was palling around with, and he and his Jew whore daughter were out. This one black guy that was really just, I mean, a freaking monkey that Trump went way out on a limb to endorse. Meanwhile, we know that there were like solid MAGA people that were very loyal.
There was a guy in Pennsylvania who was like had been a big MAGA guy from the very beginning, and was just totally shafted and ignored.
And there were a few he had to endorse, like that one, like the Pennsylvania governor guy. But I got this.
Oh wait, he did endorse him?
Reluctant. There were the governor guy. He did endorse, but there were some other people.
Oh, that was the one. I think. Oh no, it was that he did reluctantly endorse him, but it pissed off the GOP that he did it. Because they didn't want that guy or something. I can't remember what it was, but whatever.
It was that, but I mean, there were a number of MAGA.
Oh no, he basically has always done the bit of shafting the people that most that made the mistake of thinking there was a movement there.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, yeah. And some of them themselves are like, you know, they're like junior level. They want to be like junior level Trumps or something like that. Like they themselves are also in it for some kind of the grift. But they also, it's like there should be at least honor among grifters, right?
Yeah.
But there's not. Like, even if Trump's like, okay, you're also running the phony patriotic grift, and you want to do that at like a lower level under this sort of this multi-level pyramid scheme with Donald Trump at the top, he won't even do that.
Yeah.
Like, he won't even do that.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, what the fuck? Like, you would think that he would at least, even if it was a thing that was just totally corrupt grifting, at the very least. See, the thing is, even if it were that, even if it were just a bunch of like grasping people who were like, hey, here's a way to get some easy power and influence, just like jump on this Trump train, maybe even totally disingenuously repeat these kind of talking points, go out and talk to these people, and you can kind of like rake in some cash. But even if that were true, like, there's a lot of people that would criticize that along those lines. But the thing is, in order for them to do that, they would have to, like, do what people wanted them to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, part of the grift would be just delivering on political promises, because who cares? Why not?
Yeah.
Right? And if that's the fact is that it's not, though. And it's not even just that. It's like Donald Trump won't even play that game. Like, people at the lower levels have thought that was what the game was. And, like, I'll be the Trump guy for Iowa. I'll be the Trump guy for Wisconsin. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, let's do that. And then he's just like, no, he's this nigger. Yeah. This nigger is going to be the one.
Ross Perot did the same thing. You know, he really is a billionaire thing that he did, where he basically did not encourage people to create a movement behind what he gave no encouragement and no support for that.
Well, the difference Trump's is, though, Trump worse. Did. Trump intended to have a movement.
Yeah, he did. He did. He did. Well, this is – let me just say, because I want to focus on how shitty the GOP is. Even with the Great Replacement, like I said, their thing was that Tucker's line was, it's not working because they're all the non-whites are voting Republican now. You know,
that's just dumb.
Yeah, but so here's –
it's also malicious. It's not just dumb.
Here's
Ted
Cruz. No, it is malicious. Here's Ted Cruz. And he's blasting Larry Fink, and he's going on and on about Larry Fink very much. There's shades of the George Soros bashing in Hungary here. You know what I mean? Where it's like you're really going after him, and he says that that's not capitalism. And it says the senator took aim at Fink, whose company is the world's largest asset manager, and other CEOs who have argued to move away from focusing on increasing profits for shareholders to taking stances on social issues like climate change to curry favor with wealthy liberals. Here's the question I would have
for
I would have for Ted Cruz. What if it is capitalism? What if it is capitalism? Because, I mean, actually, it is capitalism.
Because it's capitalists doing it.
Yeah, it's capitalists doing it.
It's capitalism. Here's the thing, Ted Cruz. It's capitalists using capital to wield power.
Yes, that's what capitalism is.
Which is what the point of it is. Why would you do it otherwise? Like, this is the thing. Right. This is the dumb thing about the pure, like, market-driven ideology that they sell you. And it's never been so. They've sold that to you. And Ted Cruz has sold that to you, and Jewish libertarian economists have sold that to you as a way of saying, like, you really do. It's almost a way of saying there is a democracy that exists. It's just not political. it's capitalistic. It's you vote with your money, and the things that people want, the expression of the people's values and desires will just manifest through the profit motive to these firms that will just reflect back to the people exactly the things and the values and everything that they want. In other words, yes. The people will just for the sake of money will just go around doing things that people want and like. This is this is their argument, right? But then the problem is like, well, what about when people use that money just to make things the way they like?
Yes.
Because the idea is, it's a funny idea, because it's like, well, the idea then is that the average Joe consumer, through the use of his money, can change society to be how he likes it. The products he wants, the values he likes will be reflected. Well, if that's the case, he doesn't have that much money. Then the guy with a lot of money can also do it.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Right. He can use his money to make society how he likes it.
Yes.
By and if he giving has a money, lot more money by, and if he can, has a if he has $10 trillion under management, he can say, I like this company, I don't like this one. I like Beyond Meat, I don't like cattle farms. And then boom, that's what you're gonna fucking get.
Yes. Yeah.
So it is capital.
Well, Larry Fink, in this article, he responded. You could see it says, index investing has been the driving force in democratizing investing for millions of Americans with lower cost and greater choice. We're committed to democratizing proxy voting, too. In January, in his annual letter to CEOs, Fink wrote, stakeholder capitalism is not about politics. It is not a social or ideological agenda. It is not woke. It is capitalism, driven by mutually beneficial relationships between you and the employees, customers, suppliers, and communities your company relies on to prosper. This is the power of capitalism, he wrote. So, I mean, Ted Cruz looks so ridiculous. Ted Cruz, the politician. Ted Cruz, by the way, who draws his salary from the taxpayers directly. You know what I mean? Like Ted Cruz is an office holder.
The argument Fink is making is the classic Jewish argument about capitalism.
Oh, classic. Yes, classic. Classic. But it's just – Fink is right, though. He's right. It is capitalism. And that's the funny thing about
Ted Cruz. He's lying about the stuff about it serving the public and all that crap.
Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely. The way they lie about everything. But Ted Cruz, he's thundering as the populist now. He's got his beard, you know. I mean, Ted Cruz was like born again after Trump, you know. Like he used to be just a standard issue Republican scumbag, you know, like a Christian conservative, Christian coalition type.
He's trying to do the thing.
Now he's got the beard and he's the thundering populist.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like I did that beard as like, an attempt to be more like the everyman. I don't know.
Well, it's just to like cover up his little fucking chin.
It's also to cover up what kind of like he just looks like a greasy like slime ball.
Remember when Al Gore came back with the beard, when Al Gore lost and then he came back with the beard? I feel like it's an attempt to be like the edgier. It's like Hulk Hogan when he came out in black and he was the villain.
It could very well be just to cover up a double chin, but it could also be to be more like the everyman.
Ted Cruz is definitely trying to take up the – I mean, he's trying to capitalize.
Because the beard is kind of like a working class thing, right?
It's like a
slick, clean shave. It's more like a –
old-style politician that's a little out of date. But, he's taking up our causes. He's thundering about them, you know, standing up for them. When I was back on Twitter there briefly, I was reading Ted Cruz's tweets, and he's trying to sound like Mr. fucking Populist. But look at what he's doing here. He's taking this thing. He's going after Larry Fink, and instead of saying, no, Jew, you're using this environmental stuff to piggyback in anti-white policies. I'm representing white America, and you're attacking white America because you're a filthy kike. He's saying, well, no, wait, I have to defend the honor of capitalism. You're not a true capitalist, Larry Fink. I mean, the idea that Larry Fink isn't a capitalist and Ted Cruz is. I mean, the guy is a racial, like, he is a racial genetic capitalist. Larry Fink is, if capitalism was a race.
Capitalist.
Yeah. Yeah, he has it in his genes. It's like the thing you guys were doing, the amateurs, you know? Like, I mean, an amateur, a capitalist. I mean, a guy who is, you know? Like, anyway, it's just funny because you see exactly what this ESG thing is. You see exactly why people are pissed about it. And I'll say, Mike, this feeds back into another point I've been thinking about recently that I wanted to get your thoughts on. I think America, one of the biggest problems that we have is that no one can be honest about their interests. You have essentially two sides in the battle. Well, here's the thing. You have two sides in the battle, basically. The one side has to pretend that they don't even have interests, that their interests aren't legitimate. They can't articulate their interests, white people. So they have to find all these stupid proxy things like, I won't wear the damn mask, you know, like all this stuff.
Right. White people can't – literally you can't say I'm white and I'm interested – I have white interests. It's like that's not – it's like literally politically white people already don't exist.
And it's not like white people – and this is the thing. Tim Wise believes that white people are going around all secretly like wink, wink, nod, nod, like, well, we white people have to look out for each other. And so what we're going to do to pass over our race.
I don't know if he believes it. He wants the libtards and the niggers that listen to him to believe it, though.
But the reality is, if you get five or six conservative white people in a room, you will not get one. I mean, unless you are in a place like where I'm living now in West Virginia, where you will find once in a while somebody will just drop the N-bomb in conversation. But if you get
they might even say black. They won't say white, though.
Yeah. If you get
five. They'd be less likely to say white than black.
They will not, among themselves, five white men who are conservative businessmen will not make a joke, you will not use the N-word, because here's why. And again, it's not because they're out of sensitivity, because they're around a bunch of white guys. It's because if they did, if one guy used it, the other guys would have something to hold over him. You know, it would
make them power. I think that you actually would get people saying nigger, potentially, maybe, or complaining about blah. What you don't get them doing is saying white.
Well, that's the real
thing. That's the thing they don't say. Yeah, that's the thing that – and if you're talking about conservative politicians, the thing that they definitely will never do is say white. And they're – actually, the funny thing is, though, it's like this – it really is an elephant in the room, because it's like as soon as it comes up, they go immediately on guard. Now, if it wasn't their job – if it wasn't their job to make sure that those kind of politics are excluded from conservatism, which is the politics that are pitched to whites, you know, to average whites, not to like, you know, urbanite, you know, shit-lib elite types or aspirational upper-middle-class types, which are a very small percentage of the population. To ordinary whites, conservatism is what's pitched to them. And, you know, I don't know if it's even worth doing, but there have been people, I mean, it's not something I endorse or even as a good, like maybe as a political strategy or whatever, I don't know. But guys would be going to some of these meetings and people, they post videos online, they start asking questions about demographic replacement of Republican candidates stumping for, you know, the 2022 midterms and such. And there's this guy, Joe Kent, I think is one of these big MAGA, dark MAGA types who's out there running, and some guy like owned him at one of his meetings about this. And now the whole room was whites. Everybody in the room was whites, and this kid asks a question about race and demographics, and the guy immediately he went into immediate like defense mode, and he had all these talking points to shut down what the guy was talking about, and talking about how like these politics are for everybody, there's no racial element here and all this stuff. And this is the thing that and so that's what then you look around, there's not a black face in the crowd. And the reason is because, I mean, this is just the oldest, this is our old critique, is that blacks don't need your for everybody politics, because they've got politics for blacks.
Right.
And the same for all these other groups. Right. Now, the only other people that say that they don't have an interest is Jews. Well, that's because they're running everything and they don't want you to know it.
Right. Yeah.
So, have the interests of, like, they have to be protected, right? They have to be protected and things like that. But you can't – it's just amazing. The thing that really they're on – and it's almost like this total avoidance of white and race as the political focus of anything on the right has become so deep-seated that you just won't have – even in private, like, people get together
self-censor. Yeah, people self-censor. People, it's absolutely like a kind of cult programming, the way white people brainwash themselves. And so you have people who, and this is why,
it's
by the way.
It's a sign of oppression. I mean, oppressed people behave like this.
It is, and this is why white people, like white MAGA people, for instance, when they're getting very close, there's a strange phenomenon where some white people, the closer they get to an actual pro-white position, like just openly pro-white position, yeah, the closer they get to it, the more if a based black comes along, a Candace Owens or whatever, to represent it, they fall at their feet saying,
and even not even just blacks, like faggots too, like
it's the lady, like
the closer to a pop, that's what's so funny, the old style conservatism of like the stodgy, like, country club, like, you know, pro-capitalist or whatever. But this populist movement, because it was drawing on, like, actual white working class energy, they felt like they needed, like, more excuses. And I've talked a lot about when I've talked to people, barbers and such like that. And when I was talking to this one barber, you know, something about every time something... Like, they're all very conservative. And the last time I was talking to one, or a recent time I was talking to one of this barber lady, you know, she's talking politics a lot, very conservative. And if I bring up anything touching on race or homosexuals, like gays, immediately the cult defense springs in, like, well, I'm not about that. I don't care what color you are. I don't care who you love.
Right.
It's about these values. And I'm like... You know, it's just, but again, you're right though, that's almost like somebody who is the closest to just being a white nationalist.
Yeah.
Is
yeah,
the one that's
yeah.
saying that. It's like, we get so frustrated with it, but it's almost like we should be maybe a little bit, we should maybe see that guy as the one who maybe, I don't know. I'm rationalizing here.
I'll be honest, Mike, I don't think that guy is the closest to coming over to our point of view. I think you're more likely to get someone who maybe is not as close. As long as they're deeply invested in the, you know.
Well, the thing is, anybody that's deeply invested in whatever the politics, if someone's opening a conversation with you about it, like this one barber. Now, Jesse's also starting to go to her. He knows who I'm talking about. she's like, you know, she wouldn't be political when I would first go, but then it started to get more and more, and then she just starts talking about, like, oh, she likes Ben Shapiro and all this crap, and you know, it was funny. One time there was a couple other working class guys in there, and she was doing COVID stuff, and these two other guys were in there, and one of the guys started talking about how the store across the street had just been robbed. And I was like, oh, really? I didn't hear about that. And he was like, yeah, it got robbed. And it's like, they're like, even around here it's starting. And I was like, man, that's a shame. And I was like, is that like a corporate, or is that? And he's like, no, it's a privately owned private small business pharmacy. Still existed. I was amazed. Couldn't believe it. And I was like, man, that's a shame. I was like, was it blacks? And the guy, unfazed, was like, yeah, I assume so, because I see more and more of them walking around in the streets around here. You know, I see them sometimes even pushing their baby carriages. I was like, oh, great. And he, like, commiserated with me. And I could tell that this lady, who's, like, a bought-in conservative, like, that's not the kind of talk she wanted. She wanted to very quickly get back to coronavirus and masks.
Right.
You know? So... I don't know. It is sort of funny.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. It is sort of funny, though. Now, I don't think this woman in particular that I'm talking about is anywhere close to what we're talking about. It's sort of funny because it's like, yeah, they do. These are people who, if they were in conservatism years ago, not that they would have ever said something about race, but they definitely wouldn't have been friendly towards gays. It's so crazy what they did with these people, just with the mind fuck that's been done, man. I can't even always describe. There's so many of these things I've got these feelings for. Like, I instinctually feel this stuff, and I can kind of sense what these people are about, but I can't always totally easily put it in towards. I know a lot of people listening feel the same way too, that they see it and they get it, and there's just a certain thing about this type of new right-wing politics where it is actually ultimately going to possibly at some point, like, be the new anti-racist movement. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it has to be to in order to, like you say, the closer you get to it, the more you have to signal against it. Because when you start mixing economic populism with social conservatism, I mean, you're getting very you're going down that fascistic direction, you know?
Right. Like, so you better make sure that you've got a lot of niggers and faggots around.
Right. But anyway, so the point is, you have white people cannot articulate what their interests are, so they end up getting in stupid fights. Like, for instance, the gun issue is the thing that made me think about this. It's like, yes, the idea that a mentally ill freak can go out and buy an assault rifle is retarded. I mean,
everyone, like, and I understand why people respond in polling to, that shouldn't be allowed.
But the thing is, because we can't say as a people we are under attack, as a people we are still very well armed, and if we were not well armed, white America, the abuses against us would ramp up to
they'd be
10 times worse than they are now, and that's what happens. All you got to do is look at the Palestinians. All you have to fucking do is look at the Palestinians in Gaza or the West Bank to look at a disarmed population and how the Jews will treat you then, you know.
So I wouldn't assume they're that disarmed, but yeah.
Well, you know,
the difference is that the Jews, because of the political, just because of the historical political situation, the Jews are willing to use a military to attack the Palestinians. The settlers,
you have Palestinians throwing rocks, the old meme of the rock throwing,
that's true.
And then you have this fucking settlers that are armed with military hardware, you know. I mean, they're not the IDF. They're private people. Yeah,
it's true, but there are, the Palestinians do have. They are armed.
They do, yeah, because they're fighting for their lives. But the point I'm making is that if we could make the argument about that, and we could put our interests on the table as white Americans, if Ted Cruz
If white people's interests became put on the menu, we would immediately rocket to the top.
Yeah.
Because we've been doing it all along, and we have the credit. We would have the credibility.
Right.
Or Ted Cruz just wouldn't.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. That's my point, is the flip side of it is the Larry Finks. I mean, we've looked at a couple Jews in this episode so far. What do they all have in common? What Larry Fink and that SEC kike Gary Gensler and David Frum and even Bette Midler, what they all have in common is, for them, this gun issue is just totally biological, racial Jewry's interests. They want a disarmed host population. They want a disarmed host population, and they want to control the guns. You saw it clearly. Mm-hmm. You know, I always use the example when I try to make – if you ever try to make the gun control argument and you want to make it to a leftist, let's say you have a white leftist who is really – they're like a progressive, and they're really just – they don't get this right-wing gun thing. The example I always use to fuck them up is I talk about Occupy Wall Street in Zuccotti Park and in Chicago, because the two mayors, when Occupy went down in 2011, the two mayors, it was Rahm Emanuel, who is literally the son of an Irgun terrorist, okay? Mm-hmm. His father was in the Irgun gang, and he was Obama's chief of staff, you know, mm-hmm. when Obama got in.
Yeah.
So you have Rahm Emanuel on the one hand, and then you have Michael Bloomberg on the other, who's literally a Jewish billionaire media mogul.
Mm-hmm.
These are two of the loudest advocates of gun control in the country, or they used to be, and Bloomberg used to brag about how the NYPD was like the fourth largest armed force in the world or something.
Yeah.
And if you look at what happened, and I was there in Zuccotti Park, I marched past Wall Street because I was living in New York at the time. What they did to Occupy, the protests weren't going away. They sent in riot police, Charlottesville style, and they just broke them up. They just broke them up with force. Now, I'm not saying those people should have been armed and shot back, but what I am saying is, here you have two Jews, executives, mayors, willing to just use the state to just naked force crush a peaceful protest movement protesting against the excesses of Wall Street capital, all right? And they also happen to be the biggest advocates of gun control. And here's one of them bragging about how the NYPD was like his private army. So, I mean, put two and two together why these people want gun control, why they want to take away your guns. If they're willing to use those tactics on a bunch of dirty hippies, you know, protesting that Wall Street is greedy and capitalism is bad. What do you think they're willing to do to white Americans, you know, protesting that they're
well, the fact that you have Jews like Tim Weiss out there, like, fantasizing about killing Whitey, just, like, openly, publicly.
Right.
And just saying, like, you're all going to – I mean, literally, this dude, like, it's so crazy. Like, this guy – I remember Tim Weiss used to try and present himself as, like, an advocate for blacks or something. It's like, no, he's not. He just literally – he is a genocidal Jew. Like, he is reprehensibly just, like – it's just – and he gets to just openly say this shit all the time. I mean, even Ann Coulter called him out on it, which was great. I mean, she actually broke all kinds of conservative speech codes when she made that tweet. And she's been doing it for a while, which is why she's been basically totally ostracized by the conservative establishment.
Yeah,
the Jewish conservative establishment for this, and is only she's basically still around because of, you know, money she made on her books and her popularity and stuff like that. I don't think she's going to get published again. I don't know if she has been or
Antelope Hill would publish her, but
sure, Antelope Hill would. But I don't know.
She ought to do. She ought to write a book.
Just do that
they
because
would get a lot of money
because they would just make a ton of money.
And that would be great, right?
I mean, you can make the sales like her reach just from inertia, but there are, of course, people that used to be Ann Coulter fans that, like, probably are like, oh, man, we hate you now. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen conservatives say this kind of crap on Twitter and stuff. Like, she's gone off the deep end. What's the deep end, though?
Yeah.
What's the deep end?
But see, this is – so to get back to the thing, we can't sit down in America and discuss –
because the one side
is pathologically denies that they even have interest, even in private, even in their own minds.
The
other side lies about their interests. They lie and they say it's what they're defending is democracy and humanity and violence and the environment, climate change, everything but Jewish racial interests, you know, is what they come out and advocate. So you can't. That's the reason America is so dysfunctional, I think. It's because we can't actually have an honest dialogue. I mean, you sit down at a freaking negotiating table.
Well, that kind of goes full circle to what I was talking about at the top of the show. But yeah.
Yes, it does. It does. It absolutely does. That's the dysfunction of America. It's not just that we have all these groups that have conflicting interests, because differences can be resolved with compromise.
If people could put it on the table, but they can't.
Yes, if you can put it on the table. If you can put it on the table, like, that's what unions do. And that's, you know, that's the thing. I've compared what we're doing with the NJP to, like, the white union. You know, we have that phrase, white strike, people chanted at our things, and it's good. But the idea of collective bargaining, the idea, Stryker's big on this. You know, he used to have that old 19th century socialist cartoon of all the people, and it becomes one big fist. You know, it's the fascists. Yeah. It's the unity. That whole idea of we come together, and then we have people who are spokesmen. Who I'm here to represent the interests of white America. I mean, that's what we're doing with the NJP.
Yeah.
And because guys like Ted Cruz are not willing to do that,
they'll never do it.
They'll never do it, and the closer they get to it, the more they won't actually do it. You know,
like, yeah. Well, the closer that, the more they have to do it, and the more, in order to stay relevant, they have to make nods in that direction. The more they're going to talk about like blacks and gays and stuff, or the more they're going to defend them. I mean, Donald Trump made this huge nod more than anybody in recent memory to white America, and then came out and made everything about faggots and niggers.
Yeah.
And literally, like, that's literally, like, the thing is, people wonder, like, why are some of these, like, old school MAGA peds, these old school people that have been MAGA forever, getting stabbed in the back by Trump and not getting the endorsement? It's like, well, if you want to get Trump's endorsement, literally just be a fucking monkey looking ape nigger. Yeah. And, like, you'll get it. You'll get it.
Yeah.
You'll get it.
Yeah.
Say, put on a fucking MAGA hat as a nigger, and you'll get, he'll be like, I'm endorsing you for Senate.
Yeah.
Or whatever, right? Unless the Jews have somebody else they want him to endorse. If it's like an open seat or whatever, it's like, oh, yeah, you go ahead. Be some really SoundCloud rapper or something like that, and just whatever. Like, it's just, you know, and this also started happening to the American First Movement before it imploded, was they started just including all these niggers who were just, like, and I gave advice to niggers 10 years ago or 8 years ago on the show. I was like, listen, blacks, There's a huge opportunity for you.
Yeah, you want to make some money?
Yeah. Go and repeat conservative crap, and you'll just rock. And, of course, it was true then, and it's true now still. Yes. And so, you know, yeah, it's
and wild. That's why I feel like with blacks particularly, the problem with blacks right now is that there's no reason for them to sit down with whitey. You know, like, they're getting everything except, you know, functional communities, but they're getting everything politically.
Well, the class of political blacks, which are really mulattoes, and a lot of times they're Jew-lattos, a lot of times they're half Jewish.
Right.
Those people are, the world is their oyster right now.
Yes.
They are riding so high, and they don't give a shit about these niggers in the ghetto that are just shooting. That to them is, and it's not even really all that inconvenient to them because everybody just is ignoring it. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, we can't ever go, like, this is the problem. I mean, this is what we're trying to do with the NJP, is, like, for example, going to the people that run this country as a representative of whites and be like, listen, you won't let us have our own country. You won't let us have our own spaces. Okay, this is a principle that you hold, right? We're not allowed to have spaces where we can just be white and exclude blacks.
Yeah.
So given that, what are you going to do to protect us?
Yeah.
Like, what? When do we get to demand that we don't get murdered by these people?
Right.
At what point do we get to have a system where they get put in fucking jail like they used to do in the 70s and the 80s, or really in the 80s? They started in the 80s. They had another big – the other thing is, this is not the second – this is not America's first rodeo with this. Like, this happened after the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah.
Blacks went nuts in the 60s and 70s and the early 80s, and they did the crime bill, and they got it under control by the 90s. And by the early 2000s, things were, like, pretty good in terms of crime. Like, it was very low. Like, New York City was one of, like, a very low crime place.
Oh, hell yeah.
In the early 2000s. And now it's just, like, here we are again, right? And
the Giuliani era, you know? I mean, they would just, it would just take these people away, you know? Like, the ranting black on the street.
And they were, like, even you think that, like, New York City's all these libtards. Well, it was funny because there would be this sort of extreme, there's a certain type of, like, New York City cat lady. A lot of times they're Jewish, but there's some white women. I mean, probably less so the white women now. But you get this certain type of New York City cat lady that's extremely libtarded, like the kind that listens to Democracy right. Now and that kind of shit, right? And they would be out there ranting against Giuliani and violating the rights of the homeless and blacks and whatever. And despite how liberal New York City was, everybody would just tell those people to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because they were like, the city's great now, shut up.
Yeah.
Like, the city is great.
Well, at the end of the day, like, that's the most basic function of the state, is to protect the lives of its citizens.
Right, and they don't even... That's the most basic function. That's not even on the agenda of the Jews.
No.
Their agenda... What's on their agenda? What is their agenda right now? What are they trying to do with holding state power and capital power right now? Well, they're doing environmental social governance, which is a way of basically blacklisting companies that they don't like.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's setting a certain set of values, and the values are basically, ultimately, you're in compliance when, like, Jews run your company. Like, that's the unspoken thing, right? Yes. And like, it really will, you will look at how this shakes out, and you will see it really is like that. It is just that. So it's sort of funny how Jews themselves can't just be honest either. Like, we have like the S&P Jew 500 list. These are the 500 right. companies that Jews like, and we don't like the company. We took Tesla off of it because he tried to give white America free speech. So he's off of it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I said there would be financial attacks on him as well. Not just like personal attacks, but they would come after him, his other stock holdings and businesses. Like, and they have big time. The stock is down 30% this year. Tesla. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, at least it was last I checked. I can check again and look. But
this is the point of all this, the asset management of block. If they can't wield it, this power, then what's the point? You know,
right? Like, for us, what is the point? What is the point of us? The only point of us shutting up, the only point of people being like, have good optics, the only point of people saying, like, listen, don't talk about that, like, work through the GOP, the only point of the GOP saying, or Republican politicians, like, totally excluding any talk of whites from their thing, is just like sucking up to the people that are in power because you're fucking afraid of them.
Yeah.
And what's the point of the people in power? Well, it's just to make sure that their racial group runs the world.
Runs the world.
That's exactly. It. And exactly. So, like, and so the only reason that people don't say anything about it is just fear.
Yes.
And it's a legacy of fear too. So there's some people that they don't even understand that that's what they're afraid of, but they understand. But it's like at the same time they understand that it's bad because you start saying something bad about Jews or you say something good about whites, everybody. And this is the thing across the board: political people will suddenly agree on everything.
Yes.
That's bad. You can't do that. Well, why not? Why not? Whites are 60% of the population, and blacks are Jews are 2%. Why can't I say anything bad about Jews, but I can say everything terrible about whites? Shouldn't it be intuitively the opposite?
Yeah.
And the world you describe, the funny thing is, the world that you people describe to me, it is the opposite. Which is so funny that the world that the Jews use their power over media and academic institutions to describe to you is the exact opposite, where the minority, the tiny guy, is always the one that's getting shit on by this big fat majority that is always looking after some like reactionary set of its own interests.
Yeah.
And so then what they tell you is like, but not you. You're this is the libtards. Basically, the point of libtards is they've just fallen for this shit hook, line, and fucking sinker. Like, they have just completely taken this in, whether they've taken it in terms of they actually believe it or they've taken it in terms of like, I need to pretend like I believe this in order to get ahead.
Right,
it's not
right.
quite clear, but it's I think it's probably a little bit of both, because I have met libtards in my life who were both very aspirational. They wanted to make it. They wanted to be part of big institutions and get high positions and be respected by society. And they also appeared to actually believe this crap and would really shut down when it's just openly challenged in like a very obvious way, right? Like, it just like the obvious stuff about like blacks and crime and stuff, they just can't handle it. And it's not purely like cynical, like, well, If I openly agree with you about this, I'm just going to like lose my position. It's like, no, there's something more to it, because you can't go through life like that, right? You have to think that you're right. You have to think what you're doing is the good thing. You just have to do it. I mean, I think Jews are probably unique in that they don't have to do it. They don't have that.
Well, I think they think it's right conscience. To according to their morality.
Yeah, it's right for them to accrue power.
Jews just have a completely different morality. Like, they have a civilizationally different, millennial different morality from non-Jews, and it's just something that we're still not accustomed. I mean, we could live with them another 800 years,
and also it doesn't even matter. It's like, as long as we know it exists and we can predict what they're going to do, which we can. Yeah.
Here's what my buddy wrote to me, because he's got some investments. He said about the ESG shit. He said it's a fucking cancer in the investment world, and people's 401ks and pension funds are getting stuck in the middle of it with loser companies that are only getting picked for their ESG bona fides. He said Fidelity seems to be the worst with this, which is where a lot of people's retirement funds are parked. Not that BlackRock and Vanguard are much better. They're pushing this shit so hard in their client mailings. So, you know, it's people's retirement funds.
So what Jews are doing is using white people's retirement money pick winners that are to pick Jewish-run winning companies or Jewish-compliant companies on the market.
You guys did the...
They're playing with your fucking retirement.
Your retirement money. It's not enough they do it with your tax money and everything else. They're doing it with your retirement money. Oh, my God.
And as long as they frame it as like a heroic quest.
Igor Chop, of course! That's a good one. It's true. It fits. It all fits. I mean, and again, conservatives are rightly pissed about this, and they're making noises about it.
Of course.
But they're not going to get to the heart of the matter. I mean, this is just an open Jewish attack on white people, using white people's own money
which is exactly what's so Jewy about it. And it's, and according to Jewish morality, that's virtue.
Yes, that
read
is
the Bible.
Virtue.
Read the Bible.
Yes, yes.
It's in the Bible.
You know, their God is smiling down on them, you know? It's just like,
read the fucking Bible. They They openly avow that exact kind of morality.
That morality
in the Bible. It is there everywhere in the Old Testament.
Ted Cruz is the big Christian. Now, where's your Christian morality, Ted Cruz? Why are you going to drive these money changers from the temple? Or are you going to say, oh, no.
Are you going to whip them with the cord?
This is capitalism. This isn't capitalism.
They need to have their tables overturned. They need to be whipped with cords. It's just what needs to happen.
Yes.
It just needs to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Somebody's got to do it.
I'm down for that kind of Christianity, man. Right. Like, sign me up. But yeah, it's just this is like the most Jewish thing I've seen in a long time, and I see why people are talking about it. But it's something that
I like the idea of Jesus like twisting the cord, like getting ready to do it. I don't know. Maybe that's something I invented in my mind. But he's like ready. Yeah.
He's like getting ready.
he's so mad. Yeah. Anyway. Now there is a Jewish element to that story as well. We need to go into it. Is that he's mad that it's the temple that they're doing it at and whatever. But that it doesn't really matter.
Overall,
the message is. Yeah.
He's pissed about their hypocrisy, and that's the other thing that's really so true to this day. It's like where the holy men are supposed to be is where the dirtiest money grubbing greed and is happening. You know, like that's the revulsion there.
Well, they turned the idea that you had to go sacrifice to God on this day into like a money scam.
Yes.
Which is what's really – the thing I would say to Jesus is like you're kind of barking up the wrong tree. Like that is Judaism.
Right.
Like that's what it is. But again, that's why eventually he rejected the Jews. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I was talking to my old Muslim buddy years ago about the Islam, and I was saying like I was criticizing it for being still too Jewish for my taste, and he was like no, but you don't understand, like the way Muslims view it, the Jews, the whole like the history of the Jews is the history of them being like so. And this is very much in Christian theology too.
Yeah, Christians used to believe this before they got taken over. Yeah,
it's the history of them defying God and God like smacking them down again. You know.
Yeah. And that's one way. That's a bit generous, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because there are some like Jews that believe, and there are Christians. Once in a while, a Christian will say that like Hitler was another smackdown by God because the Jews were getting too out of control.
There are Jews that have said this.
I know.
You get these crazy right wing Jews in Israel that say this kind of shit.
Yeah. That's really funny.
That's pretty funny. Like, hey, God brought Hitler because we were being bad, and like, yeah, it's like okay. But you know what? You know what was happening at the temple. You know what's funny? It's funny, but those same Jews won't say that Jesus was that.
No.
They fucking hate him.
No, they hate him. He's boiling an excrement.
Right. Because the thing is, though, the funny thing is, if you ask him, though, because one of the reasons they were getting smacked down, though, wasn't because they were, like, ripping people off with money, because that's, like, a foundational to Judaism. It was other shit they were doing. Like, I don't know. It's probably because they were, like, too liberal.
Yeah.
Like they were getting too liberal. You know, you got to focus on purely just like ripping people off all the time. Like that's true. That's like true Judaism.
Yeah.
But the thing with the temple, what it was that they at Passover, which again is a celebration of a genocide of children. Think about that.
Yeah.
They go and they sacrifice the lamb and they have to buy the Paschal lamb from the temple, but they can only buy it in this one currency. They have to use the shekels. They had to use Judean shekels. And if you were a merchant, a Jewish merchant that was selling your goods elsewhere, and you came and you had like Roman money or Greek money or whatever other money you might have had, and you come into Jerusalem to the temple, well, here's a bunch of Jews sitting there like to change the money at a profit so you can go buy the Paschal lamb to do your sacrifice at the temple. This is what pissed Jesus off.
Yeah.
But my thing is like the whole thing is like these people are just eating each other with their bullshit. Like it's just like, you know, I would just wash my hands of the whole thing and be like, all right, that's what the Romans kind of did. Like they looked like, what the fuck is going on with these people? Like, yeah. But
But
I have more of a Roman view on it. I mean, I understand why Jesus did what he did. But my viewpoint on it will probably be more like what the Romans are. Like this just has to go. Like
you can see why though that you can see. You know, it's funny because you can see why. Like I mean, I understand the whole, again, you don't want to talk about William Pierce. Like, he totally took, he was extremely anti-Christian. Paul was a Jew, was spreading it to the Goyim to, you know,
delude them. Yeah, I've heard all that stuff.
I kind of think, though, that, like, the idea of Christianity jumping from Jews to Gentiles to Goy would be bad for them because it's very focused on the Jews and on what's wrong with them and on how bad they are. I mean, as a religion, again, it's
I actually don't think it's one or the other. I think
you're right.
It could go either way, and there's elements of it. Like as like there's a clear reason why. But again, when we were reading that ADL thing on extremist speech, did you listen to the show where we did that? We read new ADL report, and they had their report. Six points about the...
downloaded it, actually, and I was looking at it. Yeah,
yeah, about the dialectic of white, or the discourse of white, so-called white extremists online. And it's pretty interesting, if you think about it. It's pretty interesting. The fundamental thing was, that, first of all, they said white supremacists are, like, better spoken. Like, in other words, they use less profanity. Think about this. So this also kind of goes to, there's another thing that this goes to, which can actually tie back into, and this is kind of the last point I want to make this show. It can tie back into what we're talking about with the country being kind of insane and the culture being so crazy and shitty and producing these psychotic people that go and do these killings. Well, they say in their thing, white supremacists use less profanity online than the average person. We use less bad language than the average person. They tend to focus more on the argument, and when their opponents get angry, they tone police them, which is also like, that's kind of a trolly thing, but it's also, you know, people say, whoa, easy. Mainly what they say is when people get mad at them and yell at them, they focus on the fact that the other person is mad when they're just making arguments, and why can't you just talk to me?
Right.
Right. And so rather than, and for me, that's an interesting dynamic because I've seen it many, many times. So it's not just like we're trolling people and like, you mad. It's like, no, we're making an argument in a way that's not using nearly as much profanity as most internet users. It's more argument focused. And then when people get mad, we respond by saying, don't get mad. Why are you mad? We're just making points.
Yeah.
So, these are like the first three points of their thing. And then they get to at the end where they say that, you know, one of the things they do is they talk about Jews as a group. Oh, they also say we use the other thing they say, they use group plural nouns. This is a really interesting thing. Plural proper nouns to describe groups. So we say Jews, whites, blacks. We identify groups and talk about them, which goes to your point about nobody can talk about what's actually on the table. Jews don't want anybody talking about what's actually on the table. And they don't even really want blacks doing it. They want blacks just purely demanding shit.
Black Lives Matter, Mike. Yeah. That was my point about Black Lives Matter.
They just are purely asking for shit.
Like I said, again, I made this point in my speech, but I think it's something that really we need to like think about sometimes, is that you look at like Stryker talks about like the Catalans, you know, or you think about the Northern the Scotch Irish, you think about all the different groups around the world that are small, like minorities among a larger population that are pushing for some sort of political agenda. Always there is some sort of territorial aspect to it. You know, there's some kind of a separatist movement or a recognition of certain kind of rights. Even Washington, D.C. is as a territorial thing where they want, you know, they want representation in Congress. What's crazy about Black Lives Matter is that there is no zero territorial demand being made. None whatsoever. So what is it? What do they want? What do they actually want? I think that's what it is. It's that Jews want to – they have a thing here that black interests – they want – essentially they want black interests to not be articulated in any kind of nationalist way whatsoever. And I'm not doing the whole like base black nationalism thing. I'm just saying like they don't want black interests framed in a sort of here's our group, here's
they
what our demands are.
They don't want any interests framed that way.
No.
The very fact that they put in their report, and I brought their site up here when we got Stop Hate for Profit, Deplatform, Great Replacement crap. I'm trying to find that report again. Maybe it's under this.
Deplatform, Great Replacement. Wow. Yeah,
basically just don't let people say it, right? And why do we deplatform Great Replacement? Well,
it's not even just
the idea. Well, that they're also like that's a fucking stupid thing. They're basically because everybody fucking hates the ADL now. That's another great thing.
Oh yeah, they've really,
everybody fucking hates.
I mean, and see, that wasn't true even 5 years ago. That was not true. The
ADL,
when the SPLC was a clown show, and every Christian and conservative in America hated the SPLC. The ADL was still treated like it's this respected institution, you know, even 3 years ago, I think. It's just in the last, like, the last year or two.
I would say, like, the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, we've hated it forever, but you would go back 20 years, forget about it. It was like a pillar of the community. Everybody with just so much respect for it, right? But think about what you're talking about, how nothing can ever be on the table. Like, that's the other thing. That's how Jews actually manage this. No one's real interest can ever be on the table. We can't ever, because if we do, then they just lose the negotiation.
Right.
Because how little bargaining power they really have is revealed.
So because they have all the power right now, and they have no right to it, and so there's
and
not
they can't,
a,
so they can't honestly negotiate with anybody.
Exactly. It's you have all the joke about the CEO and the union.
And then things like why should we negotiate?
You take all the cookies, the 8 cookies, and you point at the CEO takes the 8 cookies, and he points to the non-union worker, and he says, "Watch out for the union worker. He's after your cookie." You know. The Jews are the ones with the 8 cookies at the table, you know. So, if you sit down to negotiate, the first point is, here's white people. We do all the work. We fight in all the wars. We pay all the taxes. We put the money in the fucking retirement accounts, Fidelity and all that. Our labor does that. And we get nothing. And you Jews are literally a tiny little minority of parasites. All you do is, like, suck our blood. You don't do anything useful or productive.
They don't have anything to offer us
without you. And you hold all the power. So, by definition, if you sit down to negotiate at all, it's going to come out worse for them and better for
whites. Well, by definition, because the other thing is, in a negotiation, they have nothing to offer.
Nothing to
offer. We can make every demand. And the only thing they have to offer is, like, is being in power and being able to give concessions at all. But the problem is, once that's on the table, then they don't have it anymore.
Right, exactly.
Because it's like, once it's on the table that, yes, we Jews have the power. And we're like, okay, well, as whites, we want this, 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 and this, and this. And they're like, well, no. It's like, well, we're like, okay, but, you know, there's like a hell of a lot more of us.
You could almost we're doing. You know, I mean, would you say this, that you could almost say that what we're doing, I mean, this might be something that you could
say
to just a
regular
person.
What we're doing is telling white people they have interests.
Well, what we're doing is just saying that we need to talk about openly, force the people who are in power, force their interests out in the open, and force them to justify them and rationalize them to the rest of us, and then for us to be able to articulate our interests. If we had those two things, that would be it. That's all we need.
Because one of the things, the main objections that normies will make to us, conservative and liberal alike, which is how you know it's brainwashing, because ordinarily they don't agree on anything.
Right.
White people don't, there is no real white interest. Like, conservatives will say that as much. Now, conservatives will be cagey about it. Liberals will say it with utter confidence, right? But conservatives will effectively say and believe the same thing. And because conservatives are tasked with, the funny thing is, libtards don't understand how much conservatives are tasked with guarding that hen house.
Yes.
Or, you know, guarding that flank, if you will, making sure that's
never. They don't get it. They don't get it.
They don't get it at all. Which is why it's dumb when bad things happen.
They attack the conservatives.
Because it's like you're tearing down the defense mechanism that the Jews set up. which is why also Jonathan Greenblatt and the ADL are fucking up too. But it's just because they don't get, they themselves
it's
are
like
starting
a big
to
glass
not
glass door with the dinosaur on the other side, and you think you're attacking the dinosaur, and you're just attacking the glass door.
Right?
You
yeah, know, exactly.
Break it
right.
Down,
yeah.
You know, it's like a, yeah. Yeah, that's a no, that's a very shitlib type of thing.
Yeah, and but it's what Jews themselves are doing it now too.
They
like,
are.
They're just making that error, right? You'd think they'd be more canny than this, but apparently not. Anyway. Yeah, so it's sort of funny. So what do? We speak better than average. We make better arguments. We encourage people to also engage in a civil dialogue and not just get angry. And we talk about people as groups. We talk – literally, it was crazy. I can't find the report now. There's too much crap on the ADL's page. But it's crazy. It's literally like they use plural proper nouns to talk about groups. It wasn't just like whites.
Right.
It was like whites, Jews, blacks. It's like, yeah. So in other words, we're talking real politics. Yeah. Or identifying groups, identifying interests, and saying and talking about these things. That's the one thing they don't want you to do.
Yeah.
Because as we've been saying, when it comes out on the table, it's over for them. When the reality of it is put on the table, they really aren't holding any cards. So then the thing becomes, it's like, and then their final thing was that we talk about Jews as a racial group. And I'd say we don't. It doesn't even matter if in other words, as a group that's not religious was the point, because
which is their old
the religion is what they hide behind, because there's a lot of people has been anti-Semitism that is religious focused in the past, and while they certainly don't like it, it's less problematic for them, because simply saying like Jews blasphemed Christ, it's like nobody gives a shit.
Well,
that's not saying nobody. Some people give a shit.
They just all they have to do is submit to the hassle of the sprinkle of baptismal water, and then the problem.
Yeah, but it's also an element of that it's like, what the fuck does that have to do with anything?
Yeah,
you know, at some point, like I remember there was a guy, a MAGA guy I saw a while ago who was a Groyper, who was doing the Groyper thing, going to like Charlie Kirk and other surrogates of that wing of the GOP and owning them and stuff. And they went to Matt Walsh, and they had to own on Matt Walsh. And the thing is, they made Matt Walsh look good. Because you're a Christian, right? And he was like, yes. He's like, why do you work for someone who has blasphemed the name of Christ? And I was like, okay, now you sound like a lunatic.
Right.
I mean, you just sound like a fucking lunatic.
Yeah.
Like you said, like, and you didn't get, that's the reaction you got. The room reacted to you like you were a crazy lunatic person. Like not, and Matt Walsh then turned around and just owned him and just like completely owned the guy. Right. It was embarrassing. And it was just like, I was facepalming. I was like, this is embarrassing. Right. And this is what happened and the thing is, this was a person, it was Vince James. And this is a person who used to talk about white interests. And then he decided that he was going to start hiding behind the Catholic conservative Christian stuff, because that was a strategy that America First was doing, is not talking about white stuff, because the GOP doesn't let you do that, and said we'll subsume it behind this and then still try and do like this closet criticism of Jews or whatever. And Matt Walsh just fucking owned the guy. He just completely wrecked him. And I was just like, this is just a total embarrassment. You should have gone to Matt Walsh and be like, yo, what do you have to say about white people? You don't even really have to be all that. You don't even have to come up with a clever own.
Yeah.
Just like, what do you have to say?
Yeah.
You know? What do you have to say about it? What's your take? And if he's like, what do you mean? Like, what do you have to say about white people? Man. What's your take on them? What's your position? Like, and he would be like, I have no position. I'd be like, really? So 60% of the country, you have no position?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What's your take on black people? Here, let me give you all the points, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
you know, you like the Constitution, you know? What's your opinion on the race of all the men who wrote it?
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Is that just a coincidence? Like, right. You know, that's the thing I want to always get to the conservatives with that. I mean, it's just like,
do you think niggers could have written the Constitution?
Well, is it just totally a coincidence? I mean, how did they just happen to be white? I mean, like what was how do you explain that? How do you explain that all of the founders of the founding fathers were white? You know, like,
said this in my very first NJP speech.
Yeah, you did.
I said that these things are, we created them. They're ours.
Yeah,
and these things won't exist without us.
Yeah, see, you know, it's funny, Mike, because we talk about this stuff, and there's a lot of these things that I think it's important to not light switch brain on, as Jazz would say, like stuff like Christianity, old Christianity, and the Constitution.
Well, there's nothing wrong with the Constitution.
You
could easily run a white republic with the Constitution, no problem.
Well, I mean, like, the founding fathers and the whole bit. It's like, you know, we can have our critiques of this and that, but it's at the end of the day, it's like, they're after that thing that created that. You know what I mean? Like, that was a creation of an outgrowth. Like Stryker says, this is an outpost of Western civilization. You write down to the thing of the republic being modeled on an old Greco-Roman thing, the idea of a republic. And it's like, I want to come to conservatives and people who are – increasingly, I don't even hear people worshiping the Constitution anymore. I mean, I don't hear a lot about that. No,
you don't hear it, dude. A lot of these shibboleths are going away.
I feel like that's kind of good, but it's also kind of bad because it's sort of like – it's good in that they're not clinging to that anymore. They're not
the crutch has been kicked out from under them. I'm happy about it.
Yeah, I'm happy about that, but what I'm not happy about is just that I feel like they are – The conservatives themselves would agree with the idea that the founding fathers were a bunch of racists and that they were bad people. Like that they have lost.
Well,
they've given that ground up. They're not trying to fight that anymore.
If they say that, though, they're going to lose people.
Yeah,
I don't think that would go over very well. They just don't. They don't defend. They don't. The problem is.
I liked what you guys were saying about putting the statue back up. Like, that's a really good point there. Of the idea you were discussing on TDS that
fat broad. Yeah.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you were going after her, and it's sort of like at first I was like, oh man, okay, she's basically going in our direction.
Not
Do you
really.
Guys need to be that
I
hard
don't
on?
Think so.
But you made the point. You made the point. It was very good that like. We have to go after stuff like this because this is a deliberate dead end or a misdirect into a very bad thing. But it was a great point. It's like, okay, you're against them pulling down statues. Are you going to come out and say, let's put the statues back up?
Well, she just wants to pull down another statue.
Right, right.
She just wants to pull down a different one.
Yeah. Which is very, very – that's like
it's
a classic conservative thing.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere. It's also – she was saying stuff like – It's also she was basically like the David Icke candidate, right? Like she's literally appealing to like conspiratards.
But I mean, what conservative? It's a good point in general. It's like what conservative or Republican
has run on putting the statues back? Or
has run on putting a statue back?
None, zero.
That's significant.
Yeah.
That's very significant because it just shows they're not. If they get into power, they're going to complain about this because it's popular, because everyone hates it, but they're not going to actually reverse it. They're not going to actually – and it's the same thing with everything with them.
Can you imagine the shit show, the shit it would create to put one of them back up?
Oh, yeah. Well, here's
to say, we're putting it back up.
Well, here's the interesting thing. You could then apply it more broadly and say this. How many conservatives today, like Ted Cruz, are willing to go out and talk about our broken immigration system or even stuff to do with blacks and unfair advantages that black people have? But how many of them are willing to say, let's repeal the Immigration Act, let's repeal the Civil Rights Act? None, not one. And that's really – that would be the equivalent of putting the statue back up, you know, is like let's repeal this act that led to this whole thing. So you can be against illegal immigration or legal immigration but unless you're willing to reverse it, you know, which the NJP we have it in our platform, if you're not willing to reverse it, then how sincere are you about this?
Mm. But. Oh, this is okay. This is the report. Very fine people.
Oh, there we go.
So let me just read this again. Download resource. Save. Why can't I just open it? I just want to open it. Okay, open. Okay, here we are. Very fine people. So the thing was of course they're still going after like conservatives of that. Here we go. That's a very fine person right there. Here we go. The 6 points. Here are the six points.
Oh yeah.
White supremacists frequently reference racial and ethnic groups using plural and noun forms, e.g. Jews, whites. Of course, here's the funny thing. Whites here – now, Stryker doesn't like this. I disagree with him. I think this is important. I think it's worth fighting about. Whites is not capitalized here. Now, this is – it is actually incorrect English. for it not to be capitalized, because it is a proper noun. Now, I understand when you say white, that as a color, and black as a color, you right. do not capitalize, because that's not, those are not proper nouns. Those are colors, they're descriptions.
Right.
White, when you're talking about a group, that's a proper noun. The same way you capitalize Jew, the same way you capitalize German.
Would you write white Russian forces? If you were writing about the Russian Civil War, would you say white Russian forces?
Would you lowercase white and lowercase white?
No, you absolutely wouldn't. Right. You absolutely wouldn't. So that proves it right there.
Yeah. No, it's a flex to keep it lower. And now they used to always lowercase blacks too. Now they uppercase blacks, but or the capitalized black, but
Wow, you're in this. Did you see yourself in this?
In this report? No.
What does you're it in say? The on the introduction page. Is that you? It looks like that's Pikeville. It's page 3. Fourth. Oh, no, never mind. I'm sorry. It's actually the introduction page is...
I don't know. I mean, who cares?
12. Page 12. You're in the background there. with your aviators on.
Oh, there's me. Yeah, there I am.
There you are.
Good deal.
That's good. I remember that other guy. I remember seeing him, the guy with the earrings there.
Yeah. All right, there I am. Cool.
Yeah, nice. That's cool. Anyway.
Nice. All right. We never scrolled down enough to see that. That's funny. Right, we did this on the show. Right. There's that guy.
The 6 points.
So I do think it's important. I actually got into an argument with Stryker about this, and he couldn't ultimately defeat my argument that it was actually just proper English and just use it just because good grammar. And if you're breaking rules of grammar just to insult white people, why are you doing that?
Right.
So pluralizing group nouns on its own is not offensive. I don't think that's what Jews actually think. That's like the yeah. But when using conjunction with anti-Semitic content or conspiracy theories, which is just any time you use it. So when can we talk about whites? So here's the problem. When you talk about whites as a group with interest, that is a conspiracy theory to them, right? Mm-hmm. Already, there we are. Rhetoric, dehumanized target group creates artificial distinctions and reinforces group thinking. Right, because God knows Jews, there's one thing they're not about. It's group thinking.
Right.
Okay. Now, they append white to otherwise unmarked terms, e.g. power. In doing so, they make issues that are not explicitly about race and make whiteness seem at risk. Okay, so we use plural group nouns. We talk about ourselves and having power, and we talk about whiteness being at risk. Well, whiteness is inherently at risk because you can find all kinds of things attacking it. So it would here's the funny thing. If I say Jews are not at risk, this will be classified by Jews as an anti-Semitic comment.
Yes.
If I say to Jews, you don't face risks in America. Like, you're an anti-Semite.
Right.
So when you tell me white people are not at risk, what's that?
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah. No, I know. So, I'm just laughing because this is such... Jew,
listen to this. They
nerd
use
shit.
This, they use this, less this. Profanity. I love this. They use less profanity than is common,
in social media. Yeah,
their posts were congruent on extremist and this is the other thing. Congruent on mainstream and extremist platform. In other words, we're not code switching.
Yes.
So the way we talk to each other is the way we present to the outside world, which is totally not what Jews do at all.
Right.
Right. So the funny thing is, because that also blows apart another tactic, which is another point they've made for a long time, which is like, don't be fooled by these newer kind of white supremacists who dress like ordinary people or even dress like a little bit nicely
and or nonviolent, nicely. Reasonable,
yeah, and
friendly,
present like these reasonable
and,
like and people that wear like you know
on justice and have morality
right,
and righteousness
right.
on their side.
So this is their thing with the alt right. They're like the new alt right is very sneaky. They present just like normal guys and they wear the clothing of normal people and they talk like normal people, but they're behind the scenes. But then they're just saying that's not actually true. they themselves are saying that that's not actually true, that we present exactly how we to each other, how exactly how we present to the outside world. Which I is, can't I can this, attest
this,
to you that
this
that is
line,
true.
Though, about like they append white to otherwise unmarked term by adding white to so many terms, they center whiteness and themselves as white people. This, the kind of like super privileged ivory tower Jew academic that is parsing these terms and writing in this language.
Well, like,
I wonder if they found themselves, you know, back to the future, and they were in like York in 1190 when the York pogrom was going down. I'd like to see them like try to like explain to the people of York, you know, what they did was they burned the mortgage documents, they burned the loan documents. I'd like to see them try to like explain, well, these peasants are, what you're doing is you're using this.
You're censoring debtors in your rhetoric.
Yeah, you're taking pitchforks and torches and combining them in a way that
you're mixing them together with anti-Semitic grievances in a way that is reifying conspiracy theories, right, and you're really centering the indebted people as if they're at risk. You're attacking, you know, this is anti-usury. This is anti-usury.
If you have to, if they're explaining it like this, like this is, this,
well, the other thing is this
doesn't seem like a strong, like an act of strength by
them. No, this is not an act of strength, because listen, the point is that the thing is that they're accurately describing it. And yes, the reason they're accurately describing it is because they want it gone, and they need to tell platforms, social media platforms, what they, because again, it's like, we know that a lot of these companies are run by Jews, but Jews, like anybody, they have their areas of expertise, and the ADL is the one that is supposed to be the group that does this. This is their function. They find this stuff out, and they report back to these companies, like, here's how you have to structure your algorithms, here's how you have to structure your policies to avoid this stuff. And you know, it used to be that they were like, all right, you got to stop harassment and abuse. Like, all right, so you can't say like nigger.
Right.
Right. You can't say like nigger or these other sort of offensive terms of abuse, right? Can't use these things. But then like, oh, well, look at this. Now they're not talking like that anymore.
Yeah.
Like they're using very genteel. In fact, they are more polite than average. And this is the other thing. So Jews want aside from the attack on us, Jews want the internet to be an incoherent obscenity mess. Yes. To not just be, to be obscene,
vulgar,
to be profanity laden, and stupid.
And stupid.
So they want it to be dumb. They don't want people to have actual arguments.
They don't want intelligence.
They don't want people to talk about groups, actual political issues in groups. No critical thinking, and profanity related. So maybe this has something to do with why people like go out and blast up fucking random places in public. Because everything in public, everything that's talked about. I mean, I don't. Again, it's not,
it's
like
a culture
one-to-one
of stupidity. It's a culture of
retardation,
vulgarity,
and inhumanity. And so because the basic cultural tone is so low, there's some people like, yeah, man, just take a bunch of shots at people, see what happens, why not, right? I mean, it's not like it's a direct thing, but it's like ultimately when you cultivate that, when you are out here saying that you're literally attacking discourse that does not use profanity, that uses arguments, that identifies groups and interests and discusses them, and you're like, that's off the table, that needs to be banned, that has to go. So what's left over? Well, it's just stupid, retard, profane shit. Okay, fine. Well, if the entire public discourse is like that, there's going to be people that are going to lose their shit.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. So because your interest, and this is what I'd say to Jews, this goes back exactly to the beginning, because your interest revolves around the public life of the country being vulgar and retarded.
Yes.
When people have the sort of alienation from that, and they become like these basket cases, well, it's your fucking fault, because you're telling us in your own research documents that you want the culture to be stupid, pointless, and retarded.
Yeah.
And vulgar.
Yeah. And vulgar.
Because that's how you're most safe.
And stupidity is like...
That's where Jews are most safe. And they even tell you this. When push comes to shove, they tell you this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. No, it's funny because there's actually a... there was a video I saw on YouTube. I was browsing these. I think I was talking to Jazz Hands about this. I don't think you and I talked about it. Where I was going through and I was looking for... I was looking at some good history channels, because there's actually a couple of really good history channels on YouTube, but they have to be very, very careful. There's a couple channels that actually deal specifically with like the interwar period and the First World War. And they have to be very, very, very careful to avoid any kind of like sympathetic.
Well, you really can't talk about any of that shit without talking about Jews.
But I found a video on this great. There's a great channel called The Great War. It's The Great War, and it has tons. I mean, you would love it. It's just one interesting thing after another about history and like the kind of stuff you would never see on a History Channel documentary. And there was a This video, I couldn't believe it. I just said it to you. This guy's talking about how he's complaining about the shit that gets pushed on YouTube. Essentially what happened was their channel, which is just really good history stuff, and it's like Europeans and Americans mm-hmm. collaborating, got an age restriction thing on it, and it also got demonetized for no reason. For no reason at all. No explanation was given. And the reason is because it's actually like intelligent intellectual content.
Because it's not fucking
European
retarded.
History. Yes, and that's what this funny. It's because these guys are very – they're not like shitlibs. But they're, you know, they're history buffs who are very studious to avoid any kind of pro-Nazi
sure,
shit.
Sure, yeah.
And you can tell they're really – there's like a resentment there that like how comes makeup tutorials, all this shit gets pushed. But right. us on YouTube, our thing, why did we get demonetized? And the thing he was really complaining about is the age restrictions because so many
they don't
do
anything inappropriate
stuff,
for kids, I'm assuming.
Well, far from it. You know who uses their channel? Teachers. And right. students when they're researching stuff. So if you put age restrictions on it, now you've cut off basic knowledge about
teachers aren't gonna let their kids watch it. Like just
no,
in
and
schools,
well, their computers will probably be blocked from it. You know,
yeah,
they won't
yeah.
be able to
and,
access.
And nor will any teacher will never use it in a lesson.
They'll
never
use it in a lesson.
To do that. Yeah.
Yes, and they can't recommend it as part of their lesson plan yeah. because then now you're recommending, and it's just again, it's just dry, very fact based, very detailed.
Right. There you go. History. I mean, that's exactly. Yeah, that's exactly. It doesn't surprise me at all. Just it's literally, it's not vulgar, stupid, and retarded. So,
listen to this guy for 1 minute. Yeah. It's funny what he says.
We're gonna have to go after this.
Yeah,
we'll
go after
things.
This.
This is Flo.
It's just struck.
Welcome to one of my semi-regular installments of what has YouTube come up with this time. All the new rage on YouTube is. Age restrictions. So, a little background here. A while ago, I made a video where YouTube demonetized 270 of our videos, I believe, or a bit more. So, just a small update on that. These videos are still demonetized. They still don't get any ad revenue. They're still viewed quite a lot. But hey, what you gonna do? We also never found out why they're demonetized. It's not that YouTube is especially transparent about these things. And speaking of intransparency, there is a new feature on YouTube which is called age restrictions. Age restriction means a video can only be viewed by someone who has a YouTube account that somehow has a verified age to it, like which is verified that this is a user above 18, I think. You can do that, I think, via credit card, whatever, it doesn't matter. What this also
Google
means
account.
Is videos can't be viewed in YouTube's restricted mode. Who's using restricted mode? Well, teachers and schools are. And that means teachers, and we have quite a lot of these, who use our educational videos in class, cannot, under certain circumstances, watch these videos anymore, which sucks. And, you know, there's also people who don't have a YouTube account or people who are under 18, but in our opinion, should still be able to freely access educational content about history. Because, in our opinion, history content that explains, unbiased, why things happened 100 years ago is extremely important nowadays, and it helps us and you out there in YouTube land understand how these events shaped our presence. But even though some people on YouTube might agree with that this is important, what it's certainly not is advertising friendly. Since you know, a lot of the events we talk about are not.
But the thing is, I think he's wrong. I don't think it really matters.
That's a cope, yeah.
I don't think that. I don't. Because the thing is, if it's not advertising friendly, then.
What's the harm?
Yeah, what does
so
it matter?
What's the harm? Then like, he won't get a lot of revenue.
If the, yeah. or like some advertisers, like, because the question is, sometimes they use the thing of advertisers object to the fact that their ads are shown on this crap. I don't think that would happen to this channel. And then the other thing is if the ads are targeted at audiences, because that's what yes. Google is supposedly so good at, right, is figuring out what the people are about and targeting ads to them. What does it matter? Like, why would you – if you're saying your content isn't ad-friendly, so we're demonetizing you. Well, so what? Why does it – what does it – just run the ads that you can, right? Like, even if the yes. if the revenue is just low, then okay, then it's just low if it's truly not ad-friendly. But the thing is, anything that has viewers is ad-friendly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
like, it's yeah, just yeah. – it's dumb, right? And there's always products – there's always something that somebody that's going to watch this is going to want to buy. I mean, not right. to like – buy into that model or anything like that, but it's just it's not true. Like it's not true right. that's not ad friendly. What it is,
you don't have to play the whole video, but just let him go like one more minute because he complains yeah. about the makeup tutorials and stuff like that, yeah. which is funny because
well,
it's no, just
they're not like
yeah. Well, one thing he's actually probably going to say here is he's not just pimping products,
right?
Which
right.
is what a lot of stuff on YouTube is these days. It's just disguised product ads. It's just yes. basically people doing product reviews, and they're always generally positive, or then you get the right. occasional guy who's like, I'm just going to review everything negatively. Like, yeah.
But, I mean, think of the shit that is not age-restricted on YouTube. Think of yeah. the shit that is available for little kids to watch on
oh,
YouTube.
Oh, yeah, there'll be practically pornographic stuff that
yes,
is.
Horrific that's, stuff. Yeah. yeah, and this like dry like European guy, nerds talking about history, like really interesting shit, you know, it's like yeah. much better than you would ever find on the History Channel or anything like that, and they completely restricted it, you know, like
yeah.
always the greatest and happiest events of humanity, like early 20th century history is quite messy, on real time history we do 19th century history now is also always often quite messy, there's death, there's misery there. And well, in the grand scheme
great,
of things, advertisers don't like to put their shiny new content next to that. So, in the grand scheme of things, you know, our channel is online for almost 8 years now. It has, I think, almost 300 million views, The Great War, which sounds good. And, you know, we're one of the bigger channels. But, hey, you know, it's a drop in the bucket compared to, like, popular... whatever, makeup reviews or Squid Game, whatever thingies happening out there. So, you know, it's not that history content on YouTube gets the stage it should get anyway. And things like age restrictions and demonetization, like, further amplify that because, of course, you know, YouTube would never admit that. But, of course, they don't have an interest in showing you content which doesn't generate revenue for them.
That's a cope. That's
so,
yeah, that's not,
cope. Where
that's
does this leave us?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah. But anyway,
for the foreseeable future, we're going to stay on YouTube.
It's striking to me because history is the one, like, it's one of the few things, where these dry history channels are one of the few things left on YouTube that you can actually
yeah,
watch.
That's actually watchable. You know what? The other funny thing is, years ago, I remember seeing this tweet between these, like, libtard women, white libtard women, seemingly, talking about dating. And this kind of went viral. I remember it was like a tweet series that went viral. Like everybody started reposting it and laughing at it. These women talking about this. Where they're talking about, like, you ever date a guy who says he's a history buff? And they're like, yeah. And like, well, inevitably, what does that mean? And what the consensus amongst these women was they're just interested in like two eras of history. The Roman Empire and you know the other one. Right? And so like and so it's like literally they're literally people that like the Roman Empire and Nazi Germany. And they're like, I'm a history so basically saying I'm a history buff is almost like saying I'm a Nazi.
Right.
It's like very close to, I mean, because it would be a thing that you could say. Cause I could even picture somebody saying that. Oh yeah, I'm just a I like history.
Right.
I'm interested. I'm a fan of the era. You
right.
know? Like, I just like stuff from that era. I just find yeah. it interesting. It's not just the Nazi stuff. I mean, I just like all of it. It's just generally speaking, I find those the militaries of that time period very interesting to me.
I one time saw a video by some like complete cuck from Germany on YouTube who was just the most annoying, like, effeminate man. And it was I was reading about, like, modern – I was watching videos on, like, just modern Germany. You know, I've never been to Germany, like, to, you know, the modern Germany that's out there. Like, Germany for me is something that thankfully just exists in the pages of history. You know, I'm almost afraid to go. But – I'm watching this video, and this guy was saying, like, things that – I forget what it was, but it was things that, like, they don't like tourists who are a certain, like, way. And one of the, and not just Americans, but, like, English and others. And he's like – and one thing is, like, we don't want people who are – the first thing was we don't need neo-Nazis. We don't need neo-Nazis. We don't like them in Germany. We don't want them. Don't come around if you're a neo-Nazi. And then he was like – and also, if you're really interested in, like, the First World War, like, we really are not – we don't care, like, we don't want you to be – you know,
this
if you're,
is the total disconnected libtard. Just
yeah,
like,
this total, like yeah. you know, metrosexual cuck. Talking about that, but apparently
if we don't want people interested in the history of our country coming to our country.
See, but again, it's one of those things. It's just like the reenactment community, you know, which is unfortunately growing a lot smaller these days because of, of reasons. But
well, because but, like, Jews are basically destroying it on purpose.
Yeah, but if you get like people who just have a really you come to Germany and you're just really interested in World War One. Like, that's not – like, the shit-lib German, it makes him very uncomfortable.
Well, because he also knows. I mean, it's like the guy who waves the Prussian flag. It's like, is that really the flag you want to be waving?
Right.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen people do it. Like, I remember –
what's funny about this channel that I was just showing you is these guys, they give, like, accounts of the interwar period. And it's just so unbiased that it ends up reflecting very well, generally, on Hitler and on Germany. And
yes, that's
it's
the
just,
problem. That's the problem.
Because truth is the problem, you know, and that's the funny thing with I have to say, I'm actually like, I mean, I'm not really surprised.
Anybody that knows this much about it, these guys are suspected Nazis.
And see, that's your thing years ago that you said about critical thinking. I love that. I still use it. It's like critical thinking skills. We all heard that in class, you know. That is what they don't want. They don't want us to think. They don't want us to think. If a white man is thinking, that's dangerous. That's anti-Semitism. That's a pogrom.
Well, the critical, like I said, the line I believe is that they don't teach you critical thinking. They teach you what to think and then tell you this is what critical thinking people think.
Yes.
Like they're like critical thinking is really important. Now let me tell you exactly what critical thinkers think. And it's these set of opinions.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm a critical thinker because I'm liberal.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, sure thing, guy. Right. Did you ever apply? And the thing that Alex and I used to do, even when we were doing it in sort of a more libertarian, almost like a nihilist way, just like deconstructing everything. Of course, we only ever did it to left-wingers because it was – that just – we didn't – you know, it just was more fun. Like, we didn't go into like boomer conservative groups and like start like deconstructing their shit. One, they would have just been like, shut up, and like told us to go away. But libtards, we used to be able to engage them. And then they would just break down because, of course, you know, anything can be deconstructed to a certain point. But we were particularly good at identifying exactly the pressure points and contradictions and, like, shoving them in their faces. And these people would, you know, there was a time, you know, it was funny because – and this will be the, kind of the final point. Tony was telling me he went back on to Facebook. And he went – he actually had an account that he thought was banned and it really wasn't. And so he went back into one of these old groups where we used to hang out. And he saw a couple of our old sort of – these two leftists we used to spar with, one of whom is like some Mexican kid, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And one of them was totally this – one of them like, was this commie, white guy, middle-aged commie, also just really bad drug problems this guy had. Just like communist – not really Antifa, more like older school commie type, you know. Like a tanky type, maybe. Maybe he's more Antifa type now. I don't know. And this other kid is this younger, like, Mexican immigrant. I don't know if he's an immigrant or whatever, but he's now just full-blown Antifa. And we used to at least have cordial relations with them. We would have discussions, and we sometimes would even just start being friendly and joke around. Like, we got to know each other, right?
Right.
Alex and I did in particular. And so I said, tell Eduardo that Mike and Alex say hi. And Eduardo says, I hope they both die! Like, that was like that. Just like that was his. Like, he's just like I don't even actually have like all that bad feelings for this kid in my mind. But it's like he's just like I want you and Alex to die. I hope you get fucking killed by the government or something. It's just like crazy, just like vindictive insanity. So these people have lost their minds.
Yeah.
They've all lost their minds. Now the other guy, interestingly, the white guy didn't say he wanted us to die. What the white guy said was, tell them just to stop doing what they're doing. The dissident right thing is just never going to take off. They should just stop. Now, it's really funny. The Mexican kid is like, I want them to die. Tell them I hope they die of diabetes. Yeah. Yeah. But the other guy's like, just tell them to give it up. Like, it's not going to happen. It's not working.
Right. It's not going to. Yeah.
Like, all right.
It might not, but it might.
Well, my thing is, like, I don't care. That's not the point. Like, he didn't wish death on us was my point. Like,
yeah.
He wasn't saying, I want them dead.
Right.
He was just saying.
Well, it's the old thing of I refuse to talk to conservatives. Why? Because they're closed-minded people. I'm open-minded. That's why I refuse to talk to them. That's right, why I have to. Yeah. That's why we have to shut them down. That's why they have to be deplatformed, because they're closed-minded.
Right. Well, the excuse for that is that Karl Popper bullshit.
Yeah.
The paradox of tolerance crap. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Whew. Yeah.
I love when they talk about it. Like, that's like so, it's like such a genius thing. It's It's like, oh yeah, Karl Popper. Like, it's funny when they talk about it though. Like, first of all, I hate these,
I mean, it's a form of,
yeah,
just,
but
like,
there's also, it's not even just that. It's like, there's this certain like pantheon of like shitty historical, like novelty take historical people that like the smart libtard is supposed to discuss, and Karl Popper is like one of them. And you would get this in, like, remember that old dumb fucking online. Karl Popper's a Jew. Yes, he was a Jew. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, definitely. Karl Popper's absolutely a Jew. And he was friends with Friedrich Hayek. They were like best friends. So this libertarian who was not a Jew. People say he was, but he was not. He was Austrian, but he was good friends with Karl Popper. So this guy,
I should have Googled him before I asked you if he was a Jew. But he was, so he was friends with this libertarian.
Yeah, well, the guy that wrote The Road to Serfdom, right? Friedrich Hayek, who was like a disciple of von Mises.
Yeah.
Karl Popper is definitely a Jew. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's the one that did this paradox of tolerance. But I remember it's like, you remember that old webcomic, like, I think it was, what was it called? XTC or something like that? And it's like still around, and they would do political stuff, and just like they would do this stupid like libtard conventional wisdom, and they talk about like, oh, Karl Popper, as if this paradox of tolerance that he came up with, as if this is actually some really interesting thought. It's like, no, it's just a convenient way of shutting down people. It's a convenient way of shutting people down that you don't like while pretending you're still actually tolerant. You're not just like,
yeah.
It's so stupid, because it's like, well, what?
It's so Jewish.
Well, all you have to do is then just say that guy is intolerant, right? And then you can shut him down. But
unlimited.
Like,
so here it is. Although Popper was an advocate of toleration, he warned against unlimited tolerance in the open society and its enemies. Oh my God! So the open—that's where
that's his book and its enemies
and his society and its enemies.
So it's not so open then.
Yeah, he argued. Unlimited tolerance must lead to the disappearance of tolerance. If we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, well, wait a minute. What makes them intolerant? Like, if we are not prepared to defend a tolerant society against the onslaught of the intolerant, well, isn't that intolerance? Isn't that intolerance?
Of course, but the point is, though, the tolerant thing is just a stupid fucking way to even, it's a dumb place to locate your value system. Like, it's, but again, it's like, tolerant of what versus what? And so it's like, so you're saying you're tolerant, and if you become like tolerant of, say, homosexuality, it's not long before you start to denigrate the like normal sexuality. I don't even say heterosexuality, it's normal sexuality, right? But then if somebody says, I'm in favor of a normal sexuality, even if maybe even someone who would say, like, I will tolerate homosexuality, but the ideal should still be normal sexuality. You know what I mean?
Right.
I will like tolerate the fact that there is going to be some people that are like kind of all out on their own doing this crazy stupid shit. Right, that's tolerant. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But they're like, no, that's not. That's so. Again, so then you just, what you've now done, you now send the guy who's actually being tolerant, even though I wouldn't necessarily agree with that guy. He's actually being tolerant. He's now intolerant, and now he's excluded. Right.
Yeah.
So it just it's a stupid thing. Like, it doesn't, because the word ultimately can be, you can play around with the word tolerant. So it's not even a thing. It's just Judaism.
Yeah.
It's just like the Jewish society and its enemies is what the book should be called.
there's a I'm trying
to. But libtards will quote this like it's wisdom just because some fucking old kike said it. It's fucking disgusting.
Yeah. There's a
people that our society likes people. That's why we don't like people that don't like people. Get it? Because yeah. If we have people around that don't like people, then we can't like people. So, because right, we're about right, liking right. people. Get it? See how that works? It's like, dude, fucking, just shut the fuck
fucking
up.
Fucking retarded, man.
It's really dumb. That's the other thing that's offensive about it. It's dumb.
Yeah.
It's not smart. People that are being, oh, wow, this guy really solved that riddle. It's like, no.
Oh, yeah. There was a, I was trying to find.
Dude, I was trying to find it. We gotta go soon. I'm done.
All right.
It's like, hurry this along. But yeah.
All right. This will be the last thing. You'll love this. Hitler used the word tolerance once, and just make sure the closed captions are on, and go about 1 minute into this video. Hitler says, This used to circulate in the early days of the internet, this speech, and I haven't been able to find it a good thing, but it's an election campaign speech, and he says basically...
There's Karl Popper.
Yeah. Karl Popper, definitely one of the boys. Hitler says that our enemies say we're intolerant and quarrelsome because basically we don't like the idea that there's like 30 parties in Germany. And then he says, I have to admit that they're quite right. We are intolerant. He says, because I've given myself one goal to sweep these 30 parties out of Germany. He's owning it.
We go to like 1 minute and 30 or so.
Yeah, just about 1 minute. 1 minute in, one minute.
Oh yeah, might get my glasses on. Oh god.
Just make sure the closed captions on, or otherwise it won't display.
Yeah, I got it. Okay, so. Okay, English.
There we go. Yeah, they don't play the whole thing here.
Oh, the volume is off. All right, so let's go back.
Perpetual kills the fears and prejudices of the masses.
Oh, God, shut up.
His enemy is democracy.
Wir sind intolerant. Ich habe mir ein Ziel gestellt, nämlich die 30 Parteien aus Deutschland hinauszufinden.
Yeah, it's out of context there. The whole full thing
who
is...
Who gives a fuck? I mean, at some point, it's like, you know, who cares?
I just love that, like, that's what made him popular. I mean, if somebody came along today and actually...
Well, they're like, his goal is to destroy democracy, and the people loved it.
Right.
It's like the paradox... of democracy. In order to have democracy, we have to get rid of the people that don't like democracy, even though that's most of the people. It's like the same shit.
He says that I found an actual translation. He says that before there were these 30 parties, there was a German people. These parties will disappear, and after they are gone, our folk
You start looking at all of that, and it becomes a different paint job on it, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I just thought it was funny, because he owns it in this speech. Sometime I'll try to find the whole thing, but he basically says that they criticize us.
Here's the critic. Here's the guy that's criticizing them. Look at this character.
Oh, Jesus.
Look at this character. So this character right here, I don't even know who this is. This is some kike, I'm assuming. He's saying, this is a sick people. Hold on, I gotta watch this.
Hold on a second here.
What is this? Like?
The recovered from this war, from this defeat. Here is a sick people.
Wait. So you are the one telling other people they're sick?
Yes.
I mean, if you can't see the person I'm looking at on the screen here, I mean, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. And this sick people has now found a miracle doctor. A man who says, I will turn you into a successful people.
What if he actually did it, though?
Terrible.
Well, this is the thing. It's like, I hate this discourse. I mean, God, I'm so tired. We got to go. But maybe next time we can talk about this kind of discourse around Germany and Jewish discourse generally, where they talk about how your life is a mess. Your country is a mess, okay? And no context on how it got that way. Let's just say we start from that point. And then somebody, but beware. Beware of somebody that is telling you he's going to make it better for you. Always watch out for that guy.
Yes.
This is a big lesson in Jewish history lessons.
Oh, yeah.
This is a big point that they always say. I mean, you don't have to go into it that much. It's self-defeating when you really look at it, with a critical eye, which is like, I mean, you're supposed to just nod your head like very profoundly as if you're super intelligent because you agree with this stupid shit. Like, oh, yeah, these people are clearly suffering from some kind of psychosis. Oh, and oh, yeah, here's this savior figure. Wow, what a shame. Look at how pathetic and stupid all this is, right?
Isn't it interesting with that clip, though, that they were using that idea, tolerance, that word was being used
then.
Even then. I thought that was interesting. I mean, I thought that's very, it's eerily contemporary, you know, that Hitler takes it.
Dude, and so much of this shit is all the same, dude.
It is.
So much of this shit. Dude, the Jewish stuff, a lot of it's the same thing. It's just like, guys, we're going to just shit test you into letting us run your country. It's like, you know
what? Well, that's what it is. He's, you know, that's the thing. The shit, you're right. It is a shit test because he's saying we are intolerant instead of doing the thing. Well, no, we're tolerant. We believe in tolerance. You're the ones being intolerant. You know, like instead of doing
that, he's passing the shit test. Right?
Charles Popper, you know, puts this up and says, oh, well, tolerance is the ultimate standard. Now, are you intolerant or tolerant? You say, well, actually, I'm the tolerant one.
Did you say Charles Popper?
What's his name?
Karl Popper. Karl Popper. I believe he says this after the war, but in any case, yes.
Well, yeah, he did say it after the war, but it's the same. That's what I'm saying.
Like other Kikes were saying it before during the war,
So Hitler's answer is just to take it and own it and be like, actually, you're right. We are intolerant because fuck these 30 parties. You know, if you were to say that today, if someone were to say, you guys are not tolerant, and you say, yeah, I'm tolerant because I'm intolerant. I say we should get rid of the Democrats.
Why should I tolerate your shit?
Why should I tolerate your shit? A lot of people.
What is so great about your crap that I should tolerate it? Like, what? You explain to me why I should tolerate you. It's your case to make.
How about all the people who are dissatisfied with Congress and all the people that hate?
Oh, yeah, everyone hates it. Yeah.
It seems
they're intolerant of it, so we have to exclude those people now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Because they're just intolerant.
Intolerant.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Oh, all man, right. I'm freaking all dying right. here. I'm tired. And I got to do another show tomorrow. So, yeah, I will.
I'm just
going to rehash this show again. So tune in tomorrow where I make all the same points I made tonight again because it'll be fun. And but people don't actually mind when I do that, but whatever. And so we'll see you guys tomorrow. And, you know, Memorial Day this weekend, we're going to be off Monday.
And Jazz and I, I can announce this now. Jazz and I, we're going to take a Memorial Day hiatus. But in fact, we are not, because he communicated to me there's too much important shit going on and we got to do a show, and I completely agreed with him. So we're going to do a show, and it'll probably
be good. So you'll have a weekend show. There won't be tedious Monday, but that's just that. Yeah. We always take Memorial Day off, and boy, do I need the day off. So yeah.
Yes, you do.
I will. I'll talk to everybody. We'll talk to everybody tomorrow and then Tuesday. So see you
guys later.